Film Vault.
Yeah.
Film Vault.
Welcome, everybody, to Film Vault. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. We appreciate it. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts.
True.
What the hell is that on your face?
Everything he's saying is true. What? I got glasses. I wear glasses sometimes.
What? Sometimes?
I got glasses a few weeks ago, right? Sometimes I wear them, sometimes I don't. Let's move on. It's not a big deal. People get glasses.
You look good.
Thanks, bud.
It's a good look for you.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What?
We're all wearing glasses in here.
Oh, no.
All three of us.
I don't like that.
This is not good. This is 12 eyes. I don't like it.
This week's episode, top five college... This is apropos. Top five college movies.
With the glasses?
Yeah.
Going back to the glasses again?
We're professorial. We're studious.
All right.
Top five college movies on the Film Vault this week.
We'll do a whole two segments devoted to college films. But first. Real quick.
Anderson walked in here today and said, so much to talk about.
What'd you think about the college films? The research.
You know what? Shockingly, not as many as I'd hoped.
I don't know if people realize, like, you don't know really how these lists are going to go down until you actually get into the thick of it and, you know, go down the rabbit hole, which is the research. Sometimes you're like, wow, this is a great topic. Yields much fruit. Sometimes it's like, fuck, college films.
Not the most fruitful topic.
I got five solid films. I stand behind these for the most part. Only one serious for comedic. But I realized that college films are not movies that I find myself rushing out to see. I did have to rely on some lists, and I looked at those lists, and I'm like, oh, I've heard of that movie. Never wanted to see it. Never will see it.
Not some inspiring choices.
Many movies on college lists that I will never see.
I decided not to get clever because I went with an obvious choice. My choice was obvious or clever, and I dropped the
A lot of college movies choice. are I think designed and obviously aimed at college kids, and I know a lot of you guys are college listeners.
College,
I know a lot of listeners are college kids. That's fine. But like the beer pongings and the frat house rules and the timely jokes just doesn't really speak to me, you know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah, okay. So I would think it would speak to you.
It does speak to me.
Loudly and clearly.
I found five films that I'm proud to stand behind, say these are good movies, and there may be some debate, some controversy.
Controversy. All right, so let's talk about it.
Crossover.
First of all, hey, a couple things got to get off right off the bat.
Let's hear it.
Hold on.
You've been to Red Edit?
I haven't been to Red Edit recently.
Our page is bubbling.
I'd like to thank Megan for cooking up Sidekicks, which we did last week. Listener Megan sent
the topic.
Me. Yeah, she let me know it was her. So okay. Megan, I don't know your last name, sorry.
Part of the 8%.
Megan Monteleone. Yeah, I get a lot of emails from the ladies.
From the 8%. They're a loud, chatty bunch.
So thank you, Megan Monteleone. Appreciate that. Were you aware, Brian? This came to my attention just this week, and I feel like a bad film podcaster. When I realized, when I was made aware that one Duncan Zoe Hayward Jones, director of Moon. Duncan Jones. Do you know who his father is?
Duncan Jones Sr.?
Bowie!
David Bowie?
David Bowie is this man's father. How the fuck do we not know this? I feel like a bad
man. Yeah, I don't know how you didn't hear about that when Moon came out.
Hey, you be quiet. Shut it.
That was like the big deal about Moon was like, it's Bowie's son's directing it.
Because I was so focused on the film and not all the shit around it. I'm glad I didn't go into seeing Moon knowing that he was born Zoe.
And we've used an independent research on Moon to flick faster.
I did a ton of research on Moon. And you know, I read about Duncan, and I knew about source code. I was pumped up about it.
Yeah, how did I not know that?
How did it not come up? I'm kind of happy it didn't. I think that's a testament to Moon and how good Moon is. If Moon was a lesser film, I think they'd be like, hey, have you seen Bowie's son's movie?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That Moon unit? Yeah, it's okay.
And Source Code, I feel like you didn't like it as much as I did. I didn't love it, but I respected that it was much better than I expected it to be.
His next project?
Surprise.
Warcraft. Based on the video game. I don't know if I've...
Is it time for a good movie to get made out of a video game?
I was going
to
say, have I liked one? I don't think that I've seen many... 10 years from now, we could easily do a very good top five list of movies based on video games, but that time is not
yet. Yeah, we're due for some good, some deliveries.
Anything else? Oh, okay. Jinx is still hot.
The Jinx.
People still talking about Robert Durst and the Jinx. And I had lunch with my brother and my mom and my sister, as I'm known to do. And my brother actually jogged my memory a little bit. And he reminded me of a couple others, movies that are similar, that if you liked the Jinx, you want more of the Jinx. I highly recommend The Staircase, which I talked about at length on this here podcast probably 4 or 5 years ago. I believe it's still streaming.
Okay.
I think it's an 8-part series documentary about this husband who may or may not have killed his wife. Very good. It was riveting. The Staircase.
Do not know The Staircase? I mean, very I know good. From you talking about it.
The Staircase. Very good. As well as Life for Murder, which I talked about extensively on this program a while ago as well. Both, I believe, are streaming, so really good stuff. I was thinking of maybe figuring out a top five around, like, you know, mini.
Well, top five true crime? Or is that about, like, miniseries?
Yeah.
Kind of gets away from but the ethos of the show.
I was doing some more research, couldn't find out a whole lot beyond Life and Murder and Staircase, but they're both going to take up a good chunk of your time, but they're worth the investment. I had forgotten all about Staircase. Great. The Staircase, great.
I would do top five true crime. I love this Staircase. Write it down!
So, I think that's about all I have. We can move on with our program now.
Okay.
I feel. Yeah. We can move on.
I can't believe I'm the one asking. Can we flick fest?
Yeah, let's do it.
Time to flick fest. Confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Three
sorry.
Each.
I apologize.
I'm not going to do the thing where we go first or argue about who goes first. I'll simply offer. Would you like to go first?
No, I'm good.
Good. I'd rather go first.
Do it.
That's a documentary. I'm sure you saw it too. If you saw it, Going Clear?
Yeah, I'm glad. Okay, so everyone's talking. We'd be remiss not to speak
yes.
about
Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief. Directed by Alex Gibney, director of Taxi the Dark Side, and Enron, the smartest guys, and there are other documentaries too, but those are two excellent ones that he
does. The Armstrong those Lie.
Down. He did that. Oh, yeah. Wait, no, he did that one?
Yeah. He also did a hockey documentary.
That was Alex Gibney? Okay, sorry, buddy. Yes, Alex Gibney is a director of documentaries that are excellent.
He's one of the better working directors and documentary directors
out
there.
Yes, and this was on HBO, and I'm sure you can watch it for HBO Go, or if you want to pay for download, I'm sure you can do that too. This features several ex-Scientologists, including, prominently...
You know what else he did? Mm-hmm. Catching Hell, that 30 for 30
that's
that we
right.
both love so much. Love it!
Including, prominently, writer-director Paul Haggis. Of Crash and Million Dollar Baby and many other projects you'd recognize. He's a prolific writer. Prolific, but he's a notable writer-director.
Right.
Anderson, you saw Going Clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'd actually never seen any film with L. Ron Hubbard. I'd never actually seen him on film. He's kind of reclusive, as they acknowledged in the... They found some old footage of him giving interviews.
He did not enjoy being on camera.
I did not enjoy him being on camera. I can see why he wouldn't commit himself to being on camera. He's a very... I found it to be very unlikable and very untrustworthy.
The smile kind of gets you.
Maybe it was a bit of what I knew about him or suspected about him anyway. But trying to put all that aside, I'm watching L. Ron Hubbard and thinking, this is an extremely creepy car salesman-y. He feels like the guy like at the door-to-door Bible salesman or back in the 50s or 60s.
Very smart huckster.
Aluminum siding or something.
He's a huckster. Every single person that you'll ever meet or see on television or read about who leads a cult, they're going to be a huckster of sorts.
This Billy Mays would have been this guy many years ago.
Now, you've seen The Master, yes?
That's the other thing I wrote down, which is I didn't realize the degree to which Philip Seymour Hoffman was L. Ron.
Yeah, I knew that they were aiming they're training their sights on Scientology, but never coming out and saying it. But I thought a lot of that stuff was invented. I thought all the stuff on the ship was invented.
Me too.
I didn't
realize how much
Philip Seymour Hoffman actually, like you said, morphed into L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah.
Like he just, I don't know why I would expect anything less, but wow.
Why wouldn't they just come out and say it? Why would they bother?
Well, you don't want to. Then it becomes about you're something inviting, else. It becomes right. about Scientology, much like this documentary. Now, all right, I would think about 30% of our audience has seen Going Clear at this point. Maybe a little less.
Maybe a little less, but
anyone who has HBO Go, I bet majority of listeners who have HBO Go or HBO have seen it at this point. Everyone's talking about it. It's all over. And it's kind of hard to spoil this movie, so we're going to go ahead and talk about it. Not at length, because I feel like everyone has already had their say, and it's a little bit late in the game here, because Going Clear is kind of like last week's.
TV is different, obviously, than theatrical movies, and this has been accessible now for over a week.
So about 30 minutes in, I'm like, all right, and I'm on Scientologist's side. I'm like, you know what? They're such an easy target, and it's like everyone just piles on.
I agree. I was hoping for something a little more than what I already suspected.
And it's like France, you know, like everyone for unknown reasons, like, oh yeah, fuck France, France, fuck France. It's like why does everyone hate France? You don't even know why.
Yeah.
So most people don't know much about Scientology,
sure.
And that's part of the reason it's cloaked in so much mystery.
Secrecy.
Now I can say living in LA that Scientology has one huge, awesome benefit, good thing that comes out of Scientology.
Gorgeous architecture.
Is the way that I feel about myself every day. Because no, okay. Is the architecture, exactly. They buy, they're one of the only organizations, if not the only organization, with any kind of power that buy old buildings in Los Angeles. Beautiful, fantastic buildings. And they don't rip them down. Yeah. They actually restore them and keep them preserved, which is... It's very, very valuable to someone like me who appreciates the history of LA.
Let me tell you something that I did you'd actually love. I did I did one of those Hollywood tours.
So did tourists. I. Dearly Departed.
I did it! We're the same bus!
All right. On the second stop or maybe the third stop, did they talk about the guy that was like dead in the bathtub?
And he talked about several dead people.
He wrote, he has slut written on his...
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the guy's telling like that. We're out in front of this guy. He's an old actor. He died. They found him like handcuffed and bled out.
Can we tell people what this is?
It's called Dearly Departed.
It's the Dearly Departed Tour. It's a tour of the notable deaths and macabre stuff in Hollywood.
When did you do that?
It was about a year ago.
I did 6 months ago. So...
Maybe 8 months ago.
And actually, there was a documentary about his Charlie Manson... tour that this guy does, the Dearly Departed guy.
He talked about the Black Dahlia and he talked about
great documentary about the Manson tour that he does. I can't remember the name of it, but it's great. He actually takes
the exact
same route.
Is it called Helter Skelter or something? Or is it called
It's about that's how I found out about Dearly Departed. Long story short, we're sitting there, the wife and I, we're sitting in the back of the it's like a Sprinter van.
Yeah, it's a 15-person van.
And then, the guy gets in a loudspeaker and he's telling you, we're sitting in front of an apartment building where a man back in the 1940s, I don't know how to paraphrase here, was found handcuffed and bled out and dead in his bathtub here. And he had slut or in cocksucker written on his chest and lipstick. And they found that it was self-inflicted. They found it to be self-inflicted murder or death.
Yep.
And I'm whispering to the wife, I'm like, oh my God. This is my ex-girlfriend's apartment. She called me one night, like back in 2000, maybe 2001, crying. She's going, and she calls me up, and she's like, Anderson, there's a film crew at my door right now, and they want to come in and film because the apartment that I just moved into, they said a man died in the bathtub. So I'm whispering this to my wife, and I'm like, that's Mandy's fucking old apartment he's talking about. Yeah. This is cool. And then the guy goes on to say, and then what else is a woman who ended up living there after this horrible event, she actually eats her own hair.
Is that your girlfriend?
It's my girlfriend!
No!
Oh my God, it's her! So of course I had to say, I'm like, yeah, actually it's...
Actually, I know.
It's true, she has trichotillomania, she did bite her...
Please don't sensationalize that as a real disease. It's a mental disorder.
All right, sorry, sidetracked.
Wow, major sidetrack.
Jesus Christ, but
how do you get on that?
I think I might have talked that only after disaster. I might have talked about that when that happened. So I might be part of the tour now.
How do we get on that?
And then I, actually, after saying that a girl eats her hair, man on this actual bus, confirmed. Confirmed report.
You're part of legend now. I heard your story.
No, I didn't. Anyhow, all right. So what?
How do we get on that?
We were talking about Dearly Departed. Oh, because of Scientology. One of the great things you learn about.
Wait, did you have your driver, was he slightly gay guy or was he the effeminate
slightly
guy?
Slightly gay guy.
So did he stop in front of the Scientology building and say, I love architecture, okay?
And you go over here and you take a picture and they'll come out.
They'll chase you away.
And then he tells us
the architecture.
Then he tells us the samurai sword story guy that gets shot dead trying to run into the Scientology building. Anyways.
True story.
If you live in L.A. or if you're coming to visit L.A., I highly recommend
it.
Dearly Departed
tour. It's not for everyone. It's macabre.
They're not a sponsor of the program, even though it might sound like that.
No, we both went independently, obviously, of each other and had an interesting time.
I can't believe you went on that. Anyways.
Probably within months of each other.
So, okay, Scientology. We'll get off going clear.
Why? So, did you like it?
I did. Okay, so 30 minutes in, I'm kind of like, all right, I don't really see any smoking gun. And then... What's
and
the
then Miscavige? Miscavige took over. David Miscavige.
Horrible, horrible individual.
He's basically put on this earth to be evil.
Do not like him. Anyways, that's how he's painted.
He's a bad dude.
I'm sure Gibney.
He's portrayed as a bad dude.
Sure, Gibney portrayed him. Yeah. They need a villain in these movies. But everything that he's now, he's very evil. He seems like a textbook sociopath. Somebody who will do whatever it takes to get to the top. I mean, he was like 15 years old, I think, and he was L. Ron Hubbard's camera bitch.
Yeah, if he was in a movie as a villain, you'd say that's a little too much. Dial it back.
Pictures of him and Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is towering over him, so he's got the Napoleonic thing going on. Yeah. But like what I was saying is L. Ron Hubbard got really into filmmaking like back in the, I guess, 60s. Maybe 70s.
I don't remember.
And Miscavige, he liked his huspa.
His reel, his sizzle reel?
So, no, not a sizzle reel. Just like the way that he was very ambitious. Very ambitious. So, they got pictures of him like being L. Ron Hubbard's assistant director. you know, with his shirt off, like probably age 13, 14. So he's one of those guys, just whatever it takes to get to the top. Now, I'm happy.
I like this
guy.
Kind of guy.
I'm happy this guy's, and you know, be off on your little culty Scientology island over there and do your little thing. You know, it might be evil and whatnot, but you know, at least you're not in politics.
Yeah.
At least you're not like, you know,
making law,
the CEO of a company that's like heading the fracking front, because we would be fucked. I'm glad that he's on his island. You know what I mean? Because this guy's going to win.
Yeah, he's doing his thing.
He's going to win. Anyways, once he got introduced to the story, I became, like most people, very like, wow, this is evil. Especially when they start showing how they treat some of their own very poorly.
They're executives.
30 cents an hour type jobs.
Yeah,
those
people.
They take their children away because children, what? They're a distraction from your Scientology.
You make like $1 a day.
So you learn a whole lot. A lot of it is stuff that I'd already heard about, but you get a little more in depth with it. And I got to give them credit, though, also, the Scientologists. It's the only cult I've ever heard of. Or seen
religion,
or anything about
religion
as well, where banging is not at the pinnacle.
Yeah,
banging is not at
based
the crux.
Around sex.
I never one allegation about how L. Ron said, and then he started taking the women into this room where he fucked them. I was waiting for some of those allegations. Nothing.
Yeah,
good for you, buddy. Way to not fuck your followers. That's a first.
A lot of the Scientologists do seem very well adjusted and very decent citizens. I feel like just the message of what it started as has been a little bit perverted over the years.
They're an easy target. They still remain to be an easy target. And I still love Tom Cruise, and this makes me feel bad for Tom Cruise because it makes it look like he's a patsy. Like he knows all the shit's going on, and he's turning the other cheek. And they almost made it seem like he ordered up that girlfriend, which I didn't.
Well, clearly they treat him very differently than they treat.
Well,
he's
the poster child.
He's a mascot. Easy, buddy. Oh, it's April 1st. You giving up smoking?
I quit.
Yeah, what are you smoking there?
I got a little Craft Vapory hooked me up.
Look at you, man.
Yeah.
How's it going?
If you want, go over to Craft Vapory. I did a lot of research. These are the guys who are actually sponsoring me, and you put in Anderson in the promo code, you get 20% off. So you pretty much get it for cost.
You're good.
And they're giving me all my...
You're going full hipster, man. You got the glasses. You got the e-cig.
I know. Just behind closed door. I only do this in the car.
Yeah.
And the glasses are only when I'm reading, so that's not in public.
How do you like, how's it working so far? It's only been
great.
One day, right?
This is funnel cake. That's the flavor that I'm smoking. It's great. I love it. That's great.
Good for you. Hope
They're
it works.
Good people over there.
I'm going to hold you accountable.
Craft Vapory.
Craft
Vapory. All right. I was over there today. He was showing me how to hook it up because some of it's fairly involved. You got to be somewhat of I don't want to say chemist, but like an engineer.
No, that
put
is
it all
the
together.
Size of a cigar, basically. Yeah. Of course, it's electronic.
And I've done a lot. I've done a lot of different vaping devices with this and that, and their taste profile is what really got me going.
Okay.
It's awesome. It's really good. My other flavor is fried ice cream. It's good shit. All right, so let's move on.
Let's do it.
It was entertaining. The wife and I enjoyed going clear of Scientology and the prison of belief. I do get a little tired, though, of the everyone piling on.
I agree. If there's a weakness to the film, I think Scientology was a bit of an easy target. That said, I didn't know a lot about David Miscavige. Miscavige.
Great footage they had. Great footage of inside the events.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had some of the top players.
I didn't know a lot about him, and that kind of exposure was interesting. Having like journalists talk about it would have been one thing,
right,
but having the
ex-members,
and the ex-executives.
Like top-level members.
Like hatchet men.
Who had, turned away. Now, Scientologists, very interesting Scientologists, there are a lot of their spokesholes are saying that those weren't actually high-level people.
Right.
And there, you know, a lot of double talk going on.
Yeah, but they were in a lot of archival footage, so it's hard to, dispute that.
Can you imagine, though, like if somebody did like an expose on the Catholic Church and all their crazy beliefs? Oh, I'm offending people.
There must be one.
But you know what? Every religion, anyone who thinks they're right, you guys are all fucked up. All right. Let's move it.
You going next, or are we both doing?
We're both going to do All Good Things. How about that?
I didn't see All Good Things.
Huh?
I didn't see it.
What'd you do that to me for? I thought we were doing that together.
Because you have a interest in Durst.
You don't?
I do, but I want to know if it's any good.
You don't care for Durst.
I didn't have a time, sorry about it.
All right, All Good Things. I thought you would have some information.
Andrew Jarecki
directed this. He had done Capturing the Freemans before All Good Things, and everyone's talking about The Jinx,
right?
Because he did the 5-6-part series that recently aired on HBO.
This is a rare feature film experience,
and it was all about based on the real life accounts of Robert Durst. I almost called him David because his character in this, they changed his name,
okay.
David Marks. But it covers all of the parts with his wife, when she disappeared, up to the last act, which is where he's dressing like a woman and living in Galveston.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
And had the neighbor that he killed and dismembered, which is all covered. It's all talked about in the documentary. I'm not giving anything away, as well as the Jinx. I mean, it's all kind of common knowledge now. But I was really happy to see that that character was played by Philip Baker Hall. Curmudgeon-y.
Angry.
Neighbor. So this is a very tense tone film. Not one that I enjoyed.
Kirsten Dunst
was good. She was topless in one scene. Mr. Skin fans probably already know about that. Frank Langella was good as the father, the evil father.
Did you mention Gosling?
Ryan Gosling was the first name that I said. He played David Marks.
Okay.
But not a movie that it's streaming on Fuckflix, so if you need more Fred, if you need more Rod, it's the first time I've done that. All the last 2 weeks. Everyone's been saying Fred Durst by mistake.
Don't worry about it.
Fred Durst's name might come up later.
Really?
But Robert Durst, if you're interested where the whole ball got rolling with the Jinx, Robert Durst watched this movie, which does not portray him in a very... maybe he just liked the fact that Ryan Gosling was playing him.
Mm.
But Ryan Gosling, it seems so shiny, gross Hollywood when you're like, when you see the Jinx and then right. You realize there's a movie
made about it.
And Ryan Gosling played him. It's like, that's so typical Hollywood. But Ryan Gosling didn't look like the strapping young notebook Ryan Gosling. You know, he got dressed in old makeup and they made him look kind of slouchy and...
Huh.
So,
which is funny because the poster for the film makes it look, makes him look as
because
Gosling as his Gosling.
They
gets.
Want couples to get in there, yeah, but yeah. It's not the poster and the title, but horribly marketed. And I mean, not horribly, it's probably actually quite savvy and smart. They probably got a few million dollars more for, you know, getting that poster out there, but it doesn't do the justice to the film at all. It's not okay. No, that makes it look like a romance novel or something.
It does make it look kind of like a sexy, love gone wrong kind of thing.
Really hard to look at this movie objectively though after just watching, you know, 4.5 hours of actual Robert Durst footage I don't know how I would have reacted if, like, all of a sudden the third act he's dressing like a woman and I knew it was based on true story, and I think I might have liked it a little more, but it's just kind of a dirty film. You just feel kind of creeped out.
I like when you do your Durst.
Don't really enjoy it.
I
did not knowingly lie. Bill Burr does it great too.
Really?
Before I saw it, just for like 2 weeks on Burr's podcast, he just kept saying, "I did not knowingly lie." He was like doing parts. He was talking about himself. I need to go to the market. Okay. All good things.
I saw a film.
Jarecki.
I saw a documentary. This is one from 2007 called Dreams on Spec. Do you know Dreams on Spec? Have you seen Dreams on Spec?
Oh, wait, one more. I'm sorry.
Oh,
one more.
On.
Fuck.
Jesus.
Some really good stuff. I forgot about it. You know, you got to keep me honest to have me make sure that I look at my notes, buddy. I'm sorry, okay? My notes are in my phone. You kill trees, so it's a little different. All good
you
things.
You have both paper and phone.
But it's beyond the film. So all good things. The stock that he used. He used like home footage stock, which is supposed to look like Super 8, but he the stuff from like the early days, like the 70s and 80s, it looked like actual film stock from that time, which he probably used, which was great. It looked really good. I appreciated that side of it. And there is stuff that you will see, actually, if you need more Durst, like I said, I think you're going to like it because I learned more horrible things about Robert Durst that they don't cover in the 4.5 hour documentary.
How is that possible?
I mean, there's this. He
oh,
pulls,
wait, the dog? The dog?
They get it in the dog. That's I was weird. Wondering, like, what happened to that beautiful husky? Oh, they talk about it.
That's weird. They didn't get it in the documentary.
And maybe because I think that Jarecki really did like Durst and wanted him to be innocent.
There's a bit of a Stockholm syndrome going on.
Because there's a scene which made me annoyed. Like, I really disliked the film when he is at a party with his wife at her brother's house, and it's like her birthday party, and he gets up and he wants to leave, and she says no. He goes out of the car, then he comes back in. Ryan Gosling comes back in, grabs her by her hair and pulls her out, and it's like, dude, why you gotta go so drama right. on me? You know what I mean? Right. Why do you gotta Hollywood it up? I went on a little research. 33 disturbing facts you didn't know about Robert Durst. That's one of them. It was a Christmas party, though. It wasn't a birthday party. And he pulled her out. And her brother saw what witnessed. Her whole family attests to it. And they didn't talk about it in the documentary.
Weird.
It was weird. Nick Offerman played her brother, which was kind of strange as well.
Okay.
Nick Offerman.
Why is that strange? He's an actor.
He's comedic. Strange to see him in a dramatic role. But anyways, yeah. Check out 33 facts you haven't seen about Robert Durst.
More interesting than the movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are your final thought on the movie? You haven't said whether you liked it or not.
I'm glad that I saw it just because I'm high on the Jinx, and it was a fascinating story and very well done. And Robert Durst is a fascinating person.
You feel like he closed that, not closed, but completed that chapter of...
Yeah, I feel like until there's more Robert Durst news, which there will be moving forward, you know, with the trials and whatnot coming and going. But yeah, my wife and Dr. Drew are both going kind of ping-ponging back and forth through me as to what he probably is.
Guilty or innocent?
No, far as the diagnosis, schizoid affective, full schizophrenic.
Psychopathic.
Antisocial personality disorder. Yeah. There's a lot of go back and forth. They're arguing through me.
You're the conduit? Yeah, you relay messages?
I have no idea the words that I'm saying. Just say them.
Okay, because your wife's in the social work thing. Yeah, that's right. Dreams on Spec. Dreams on Spec is a documentary from 2007. It's directed by Daniel J. Snyder. Okay, so it follows...
Why did you watch it?
I had heard someone reference it, and it's on Netflix, and it's one of these documentaries that I love, or it's a type of documentary that I love, which is a documentary about real people, Hollywood, aspiring to be in Hollywood, on the fringes of Hollywood. It was kind of a combination of...
Tales from the Script.
A little bit of that, but that's more successful screenwriters talking about their screenwriting. This is more...
No, I think Kevin Smith was on there.
Okay. This is more Confessions of a Superhero.
A little joke, a little slight.
That's good stuff. This is like Confessions of a Superhero or Strictly Background. Remember the one about extras?
Yes.
This is sort of like that. These are three people... They do talk to some successful screenwriters, some of you have heard of, but the main three characters in this are three, they are great archetypes. They're the three people trying to basically become big-time screenwriters. One is who is this? Oh, yeah, one is a married guy. He has an autistic kid. He's a day trader. That's how he makes his money, and he's forever tinkering on this one script. Anderson, you should listen, because I imagine you would find a lot of familiar beats in this, just for your own life and write it. You write a lot, and you're trying to make movies and shorts and stuff, so...
No, I don't try, actually. Make them.
We make shorts, and I imagine you aspire to make a feature film someday.
It's coming.
There you go. Yeah. Well, so that's the one guy. He's a married guy. He's he's trying to make this his living. He's a day trader.
What kind of movies is he working on?
He is making... Oh, God. They never even really get into it.
Really?
It's more about the... What is he working on?
Something fantasy. Something fantastical.
Oh, probably. Okay. It's very secondary.
Probably not about child rape.
It probably is not. Then there is there's the young guy. He's sort of he's working as an assistant at an agency. He's preternaturally sort of obsessed with his place in the business. He's getting headshots done. He's never sold a script. Ew.
Don't like this
guy. He's very aware of...
So they got three different, very different types of people.
Yeah, and season number two. And the third one is a black woman, a younger woman who wants to...
She's got a voice. It's a very unique voice.
Yeah, she started her own production company to finance her own script into a movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like... Here's the overall...
It's probably something that would win a lot of festivals, but be almost unwatchable.
Possibly. She's having trouble raising money for it. She's actually losing money herself. She's like,
I just said was very offensive to many people, but...
But it'd be horrible to watch?
Whatever movies she made.
Festival
probably
movie.
Be about the plight of the struggling young African-American woman.
That's very racist.
Who...
You can't say that.
But...
What?
I mean, pretty much every movie you see at Sundance is about rape or about women's power or...
If you can combine all
minority,
those things.
Yeah. It's very left.
You have a hell of a movie. Yeah. So, there... With this industry, and specifically when it comes to screenwriting...
I see so many things I should never say.
You should really not say these things. There's a lot of... People are self-delusional... But you kind of have to be self-delusional to make
it
in this industry.
That's funny. It's absolutely true.
You really do have to, in order to beat the odds and become successful, especially as a screenwriter, you have to delude yourself.
Especially if you're very young, like these 23, 25-year-old kids that are on these sets, directing like Pacino, you have to be a little bit crazy, very full of yourself, and a little bit mentally, I would say, unhealthy because you're got to be somewhat of a sociopath.
Yeah. Like the one guy, the older guy who is the day trader, that says at one point a title card, he remortgaged his house and spent $200,000 of his own money to make a movie, a feature film, that no one has seen yet. It's like it has never been released. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bit of a...
Disconnect.
Yeah, there's a fake it till you make it kind of thing where, they're acting like big shots to an extent.
It's like the lawyer who, Saul, just recently, and Better Call Saul, he gets a really expensive suit and he gets an expensive car because you gotta...
Act as if.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. In fact, it's funny you mentioned lawyers, because the one guy, the younger guy, he's like, I got a manager now, I got an, and she hooked me up with a really good entertainment attorney. And it's like, all right, well, entertainment attorney, that's just someone you have to pay to like negotiate your contracts. That's not like a great thing.
It's almost like a manager.
You can hire, anyone can hire a entertainment attorney, but he's convincing himself that you know he's going to make it. Huh?
The name of this game?
It is Dreams on Spec. Spec being like spec script, like speculation.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm explaining to the audience.
I like the idea of this, and I think it's funny and ironic that this is probably the only actual feature to come out of these three stories.
It is, because this is 2007. I only just heard about it recently. I went back and I went to IMDb immediately and Googled or looked up all these people, and none of them had done anything.
Now, do you care for any of them? Because I'm going to like the movie more. When I'm just hearing you talk about them, I default to hate and no. And like, I'm just picturing people that I can't stand.
Oh, really?
And like, I'm going to be enjoying them failing. But it'll be a much better documentary. I'll enjoy it much more.
The young guy is the least sympathetic. He's kind of...
Okay,
he's neither here nor there.
He's the headshot guy.
The woman you feel bad for, because she's trying earnestly to make what she thinks is a great movie, but she's also... This is where the self-delusion comes in. She started this production company to make her own script into a movie.
Right.
It's clearly not getting any traction, but she's sent out the script to major A-list actors, and she's like, and we're waiting on Adrian Brody to see if he'll take the lead.
Like,
you fucking think Adrian Brody? This is post-Oscar Adrian Brody. Like, you fucking think Adrian Brody's even going to reply?
Houdini will not reply to you.
That's, was he Houdini?
Yeah, he's playing Houdini, the TV show. Right.
Sorry. He was, not at this time. And then the
pianist will not.
The dad, the older guy is the most sympathetic character. He, what happened at one point?
All right.
I'm going to tell you.
I feel like you've piqued my interest. I feel like I've wet the beak with the knowledge.
There's a very uncomfortable moment where he's at a diner with his wife and their autistic child, and, he says to the wife, he says like, oh, would you, because he's ever tinkering with this thing. This fucking screenplay has been 2 years in the making. And he says, oh, honey, would you read my latest draft? And she kind of rolls her eyes. You go, sure. He's like, well, don't you want to read the draft? She's like, yeah, but it's just another draft or whatever. And then at one point he says something like, oh, what is that? He's like, and then he like tries to cheer her up by saying, I'm going to try and get Terry Hatcher to read it. She's like, oh, okay.
That's like his little carrot that he's got for himself.
Yeah.
He's going to try and
get Terry Hatcher to read it.
But
here's the only thing that I didn't like about it. I went back and looked. They were a little disingenuous, because the older guy, who I felt really bad for because I thought he was really fooling to himself and maybe mentally ill, he wrote on Doug, the TV show, like the little animated show. He wrote on that for like 2 years, and he is a co-writer on Doug the movie. So he's not he's not trying to break in. He still is at least on the fringes of the industry. So a good movie, not a great movie, but if you love movies and if you love documentaries about movies, you will find a lot interesting in this. Dreams on Spec.
All right, do your other one. What else you got?
Oh, am I doing another one?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Because I'm very excited about my last one.
Oh.
Pumped! Should have led with that. I should have explained that I'm very happy to talk about a movie that's in theaters now.
Can I have it?
Comes out wide the day this thing drops.
Okay.
So,
well, let's hustle.
And I feel like it's a movie that needs to be championed.
Okay, well, here's a movie that I liked, and I think you liked too. We talked about it a few months
ago.
Can
I say that I love the movie? I'm gonna play fast now.
Really?
I love it.
Love.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't remember if you loved or not Top 5. Chris Rock Top 5?
Yeah, it was really good.
I liked it too. Chris Rock wrote and directed.
That
top
was
five.
One of the ones that I flicked fast, and I kind of felt bad after the show, like I didn't really explain it well enough.
Okay.
And this and that. So if you have not seen Top 5 and you listen to this here program, I think the majority of people that listen to this show would like Top 5.
I agree. Funny movie. Well thought out.
I still think about it. And it's been like, a couple months since I've seen it.
Chris Rock stars in it. Rosario Dawson, Gabrielle Union, J.B. Smoove, Kevin Hart, Cedric the Entertainer, who is amazing, by the way.
Cedric's always amazing.
Cedric was great.
The sex scene is one of the...
It was fantastic.
If we were to do Top 5 sex scenes again...
It might make the list.
Might make the list. If we did comedic sex scenes, it might be the number one.
For sure. Listen, I don't want to get too gross, but the orgasm shot.
There's no fluids or anything. But,
no, but it's
the reactions that you get too.
It's good stuff. He gets to sink his teeth into some really good lines. There's some great cameos in here. I won't give any of them away, but there's some great famous people doing some absurd cameos, which is fantastic. This is a really interesting insight into fame, Anderson. I imagine Chris Rock drew on his just being famous. I mean, I wouldn't know if you would call Chris Rock an actor or a comedian or whatever.
Well, the first time I ever saw him was as Pookie.
Oh, in New Jack City.
Yeah.
I never saw him.
Sucky cock for Rock.
Get that drop.
It's pretty good. All right.
I love the family asking him for money.
So he's very famous, and he's
nice
taking a walk through down New York with this reporter who's doing a piece.
I should point out that Rosario Dawson is doing a story for the New York Times. Which, by the way, one of the only parts of the movie I didn't like was I remember he had that feud with the movie reviewer from the New York Times, and at one point he reads one of the reviews, and it's really snarky and really really. Edgy, and the New York Times is a very stuffy paper. It has a very self-serious paper. There's no way that would have run in the New York Times.
I don't know about that.
I would have a hard no.
Janet Maslin, doesn't she?
No way.
She would get very snarky.
Okay. Never snarky.
I don't read the New York Times.
They're self-serious.
That's shocking, probably.
You're thinking of the New York Post.
Did you say that it was written and directed by
Chris Rock? But it's funny because I imagine a lot of this is drawn. I imagine a lot of it's drawn on his real life. And did you notice that when you're walking down? Part of his backstory, the character's backstory in the movie, is he was in a very popular, but you get the idea, very artistically bankrupt series called Hammy the Bear.
Yes.
And people are walking in the street constantly, Hammy! Hammy! They're yelling at him.
Birdman.
Catcalling him.
Very similar to Birdman in that sense. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, he wants to be taken seriously. He wants to do something different.
That's right.
Very similar to Birdman in that realm. As far as an artist, a popcorn movie star wanting to be taken seriously, you know, be damned all the fame and riches that come with it. He wants to be taken seriously. That's more important to him,
right?
Than the fame
Hammy
and the
four.
Money.
Hammy four.
So he actually, which is comedic as well, the movie that he was going out and promoting
right.
at the time, which was
Hammy. No, it was the slave uprising.
It was a slave. It was like
uprise with a Z.
Yeah. Just looked comically bad because it was a comedian doing drama, which doesn't work out very well, very often. Jim Carrey. Doesn't.
That said, the one subplot I didn't like was the one with the boyfriend. Remember with the boyfriend at the hotel?
No, I liked that. That was fun.
I didn't like it, but I'm going to say that...
Talking about Rosario's boyfriend.
Yes, Rosario Dawson's boyfriend from Workaholics. It's okay because I love... Chris Rock clearly put his heart into this movie, and I like the imperfection. When there's not a sheen to it, when it's not a shine to it, when it's not polished...
I don't think it was an imperfection.
Well, I found it to be an imperfection, but you would not call it a perfect movie.
Anders,
would you not call this a perfect movie?
No, what is a perfect? There's no such thing as a perfect movie.
A perfect movie is a movie. Sorry, what I'm saying is a movie that feels like it's had the corners shaved off by the studio. It's been focus tested to death.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a movie that he believed in. He wrote. Damn the torpedoes!
Right.
I'm going to put in all the flaws because I like it and I think it's funny.
Right.
It's what I want to say. I don't know if you know Anderson. I wrote a New York Times bestselling book.
Oh my fuck.
And it's imperfect. I recognize that.
Imperfect.
All joking aside.
Typo.
All joking aside. I think I did a good job, and I'm proud of it. I recognize that it's imperfect.
Nearly enough about Anderson.
Good point. Enough. I recognize that it's imperfect, and there's parts in it that I look back and I think, man, maybe I shouldn't have put that in. Maybe I shouldn't have put the chapter about the douchebags in. But you know what? It's imperfect, and it is what it is, and I'm proud of it, and it's out there, it's my. I imagine Chris Rock feels the same way at this movie. But if you went back to look at it a year from now, maybe you'd think, that subplot
didn't
really add much.
That's the way it is with anything, Brian. Any kind of art you ever create, that's the way it is. That's the way it's always going to be.
But I imagine some
unless you're a blowhard who makes something and then just thinks it's the greatest thing in the world and then just moves past everything and never looks back at it.
I was going to say,
that's why
there are a lot of people who put things out and be like, that was it, perfect, just what I wanted to say.
I mean, it is what it is, and I appreciate that you're saying what you're saying because, yes, leave it as is. It is imperfect. Don't try and go back and recut Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Then you get Star Wars. Then you get Star Wars, the remastered.
Don't pull walkie-talkies where the guns are, because that's offensive. to my childhood.
That was E.T.
I know.
I'll tell you myself.
I'm moving on now to another alien movie, same director. Don't fuck with my childhood because you think it's imperfect.
Top 5 is a good movie.
Top
I really
five.
Liked it. And check it out. It's available now for rent.
Wow. Some artists don't like their work. And they want to, they look back on it and they say they change it. Paul Thomas Anderson, in the interview I was listening to him with recently, he was talking about Magnolia.
Mm.
Magnolia.
Okay.
And how he would just chop the fuck out of it now.
Really?
Way too long. I would cut that thing way down.
But I love the imperfections in that. That's a movie that just rambles and it goes on, but you get some great stuff out of that.
Speaking of imperfection, it's funny you bring this up because it kind of leads me right into this. I was actually thinking this movie that I'm about to talk about, Not a perfect movie, once again. Mm. Not many movies are.
But
this movie
it.
Is not made for me.
It.
Was not made for me. So there's a lot, some choices there that I don't appreciate.
Okay.
There has never been a movie made for me. It will be when I make my movies. That those movies I'm sure I'm gonna have to make some compromises,
sure.
But I'll be making movies that I would want to see. Every choice is gonna be like, that's what I want to see. But this movie, it's on Theater A, theaters today.
Today,
yeah, based on a true story. Now here's the here's the part of the true story that it's based on. And I'm gonna lead with this. All right, this is an actual true story. John Lennon wrote a letter to a British musician.
Oh yeah,
I knew you were gonna do this. And don't start piling on and talking.
I saw the trailer.
All right, well, I have not seen any trailers. This might have been fucked by the trailers. I don't know because I don't watch them.
Instantly, I'm intrigued because the trailer looked pretty vanilla.
Did it? Yeah. I could see that. Okay. And I could see it, like, you know, tainting the movie. I could see it affecting the movie. So Brian, don't laugh because I said taint. So John Lennon wrote a letter to a British folk musician named Steve Tilston back in 1971. There was an article written about this. Tilston, however, Steve Tilston, this folk musician, did not receive the letter. Some nefarious fuck in the record industry got his hands on it, and he decided to sell it to a collector. So poor Steve Tilston never saw this letter from John Lennon of the Beatles until 2005. What is that? 34 years later, he finally gets the letter. And screenwriter, I don't have his name right now, Fogel, I believe it's Fogel, took this premise, and he wrote an entire movie around it, and he calls that movie Danny Collins.
That's right. Starring Al Pacino.
And let me tell you, I love Danny Collins.
Really?
I love this movie.
I'm so glad to hear that because I was not expecting much from this.
Oh, shit. Danny Collins. I went in not really sure what to make of it. And I wasn't even sure I was going to watch it until I saw Danny Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby. Yeah. I've heard his name said so many fucking different ways.
I assume it's, like it's Cannavale.
Cannavale.
Huh?
I don't know.
Who directed Danny Collins?
The guy that wrote it as well.
Oh, Fogelberg?
Not Fogelberg. Damn it, get off of there, you
bastard. Oh, the
bastards.
Pop-ups. So many pop-ups.
What's going on? No, that's not the correct program.
Come on,
thing.
Bro.
Settle down. I wanted to go last so that I could, but then you demanded that I look at you and listen to you.
I know, weird that way.
I don't like it.
So,
Dan Fogelman.
Peculiar.
You're right, Dan Fogelman. Who also is known for writing mainly. He's a writer. Crazy Stupid Love, Brian. Bolt.
Oh, yeah.
Pixar's Cars. Bolt. I like that Bolt. But he directed this one. And, okay, let me tell you. Here's the storyline. Al Pacino, a very subdued Al Pacino. Not since Phil Spector has he been this subdued, even though Phil Spector might have been the last movie that I saw him in. But his hoo-ah, all that shit's gone. He's mellow. He plays like I think he's 60. He might have been 70. I think he plays a 60-year-old, aged, rock anthem music singer.
It seemed to me like he played kind of a Neil Diamond or a Tom Jones type.
Barry Manilow.
Right.
Jones.
Good call.
These guys.
Manilow,
yeah, that's what he is. So he's like, you know, he's got a band behind him. Huge, huge success back in the 70s. And then it flashes forward to him, and he's like 60. And his manager, played by Christopher Plummer.
He's beloved. He's not like down and out, right?
Nah, he's still like, it opens up with this great Goodfellas scene, a Goodfellas shot where they follow him in the bowels of the Greek theater out here in L.A. Onto the stage. And it's a pretty great shot. And they got the full audience there at the Greek theater. And then he does his thing. And, you know, you got to suspend belief a little bit and let Al Pacino be that Barry Manilow type character. He doesn't have a great voice. He doesn't have a great stage presence even. But, you know, you just imagine what might have been.
But it's, you imagine it's kind of a nostalgia thing. I mean, he's probably, you know, an older version of a younger rock star.
Yeah, and they show like his old audience gumming licorice in the front in the front row. And he gets this letter from this where the whole story, the crux, the catalyst for the entire storyline. So he gets this letter from his best friend and manager, played by Christopher Plummer, who was fantastic, was fantabulous in this one as well.
Okay.
And it, you know, kind of like changes his whole life. He's still doing blow. He's still doing, you know, whiskey every night. But it's done in kind of a vanilla Lifetime. This could have been... I could have seen this on HBO, I think. Like, I got made for HBO, like much like Phil Spector was, I think. But it goes... When he picks up and moves to New Jersey, just leaves everything, leaves his girlfriend who's like, you know, 25 years old and naked, leaves her and goes and he takes up residency at this Hilton, Brian, at the Woodcliff Lake, New Jersey Hilton. And he just moves in there because he wants to make redemption and he wants to go after what's important because of this profound letter they got from John Lennon. And he realizes his whole life could have been different if he got this letter. Mm. And the letter essentially said, fame and fortune doesn't have to ruin your career. Give me a call. We could talk about it. And he had his phone number on there.
Wow.
And he realized, if I call John Lennon, I might not be this washed up.
Yeah, could go a different direction.
Not even washed up. He's still selling these places out. Money's not an option. He has a private jet. You know, the man's very rich.
He's more of a sellout in his own mind.
Totally. A sellout. Like, they go into songwriting, how he doesn't write his own songs. They're just given to him. He meets Annette Bening at this Hilton in New Jersey at the Woodcliff. And their patter. Which is a line that I'm stealing from the movie. It's fantastic. It reminded me of Tucci and Patricia Clarkson in Easy A.
Okay.
Very good patter, Brian. Good patter good back patter. And forth. Loved it. The kid was great. There's a little kid, a little girl with hyperactivity. She's fucking phenomenal. Bobby Cannavale. I love that man. I love him.
You might be saying it right.
He's fantastic. I think one of the times I said it right. Jennifer Gardner actually made me smile and was good in this. It's an emotional comedy, a very emotional comedy.
Is it likes Crazy Stupid Love?
Yes, but it doesn't ever get love.
Okay.
Even though it does, but you know, as in, there's three acts to Crazy Stupid Love. We talked about it here before. Crazy's good, Stupid's great. The love part of that movie just fucking felt like
Act Three is.
It was very Hallmark, schmaltzy, vanilla, milk toast. But this. The one problem that I have is like the music. Some of the music might be a little bit over the top. They use a lot of John Lennon stuff, a little bit over the too on the nose with some of that. But it is what it is. It's got some round edges, but it's an R-rated movie. There's a lot of foul language here. There's some nudity, some good nudity in the beginning, and the lead characters are great. And it fucking got me choked up. It's an MCOM. Is that such a thing? An emotional comedy?
Oh, MCOM. EM. Maybe like the letter M.
MCOM.
Yeah. Okay. Emo com.
This fucking movie worked for me, and I could see it being a little sleeper hit that kind of, you know, a lot of people respond to, or I could see it just kind of being like yeah, it was good,
fading away.
I could see critics. It's actually got like a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. I could see critics kind of being embarrassed of liking it and saying I like it, but I love this movie.
Okay.
I love it.
I'm excited to see it now.
I want to see it again. Every single character is so well done, so colorful, and you care about them. You actually care about where they're going. It's been a long time. It's a feel-good movie. A really well done, great little feel-good movie. Oh, I loved it.
Love it.
Danny Collins.
How's the music?
Yeah, if you like John Lennon, you're going to enjoy yourself.
Speaking of music, see Logan Creeping Music?
Well, then I'm done with Danny Collins. You know, there's two movies in theaters right now that...
Apparently he's done with the segment.
I'm a little embarrassed to say that I love them, but Chappie. Danny Collins. These are two movies I should not like on paper.
Is this the year of guilty pleasures?
I don't know. But Chappie I should not love. Danny Collins should not love.
2015, Loving What You Shouldn't.
These are great, though. Mm. Great little movies.
Coming up next...
Chappie isn't really a little movie.
That's not a little movie at all. Coming up next, top five college movies. Anderson, imagine my delight. Oh, this is the second time I'm going to mention shrinkage. Imagine my delight when I saw on the Amazon report that someone had clicked through and purchased shrinkage through Amazon.com banner on AndersonandBrian.com. And then imagine my horror when I realized they bought a 50-cent use version.
Thanks for clicking through, though.
For the 4 cents. So great. Thank you, seriously, for clicking through. Every little bit helps. We do appreciate it.
That reminds me of Bobcat Goldthwait bit where he used to talk about, he actually, true story, he went on eBay. It was when eBay was new, and he was looking himself up, and he found like autographed headshots of himself selling for 1 penny.
Oh my God, what if mine was autographed?
Brian.
No, seriously, it was one that I signed. Anyway, other things that were purchased through the Amazon banner, a Camp Crystal Lake summer t-shirt, summer 1980.
Jason.
Yeah. A 4-in-1 convertible crib, an alien poster for with Sigourney Weaver and Yaphet Kotto. Oh, Yaphet Kotto's in the movie, that's why. Stupid. What else is
Brian
here?
Actually gets to hear the music now, kids.
Oh, no, it's distracting me. Oh, someone got an HP laptop?
That was like authentic. Oh, no, it's distracting me. Somebody got a what? I'm sorry.
An HP laptop. You can get artisan salami, Anderson. Artisan salami two-pack on Amazon there. Hey, oh, the Taintus Super Soft C-Ring.
Taint.
Someone got a cock ring. That's what it says.
It's the first time cock ring has ever been uttered on this program.
Do you watch Community?
And I don't appreciate. Yeah, I do watch
Community. Someone got Troy and Abed in the morning mug.
Harmontown.
Troy and Abed in the morning.
That's right.
An Apple iPod Shuffle. 2 gigs. And what is this here? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, this was interesting. I actually looked at what this was. This is a training lock for people to learn how to pick a lock. Like it has like one of the sides of the lock is like exposed.
That's terrifying.
So you can see it.
I don't know if I like that.
I know, it's very upsetting.
It would be a nice skill to have, because I lock myself out of my house all the time. It would be a very nice skill to have.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Amazon should be offering.
Seems odd, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can use your little pin there to do the lock. Other things were...
How to rape kit coming next.
Jesus. H&R Block tax software.
I wonder
premium.
If you buy...
premium.
If you buy the how to pick a lock, you know, like Amazon says, people who bought this also bought.
Yeah.
I wonder what that...
Other various things.
I really want to know what people who bought that actually also bought.
The iRobot.
Ski masks.
The iRobot Brava floor mopping robot.
Gloves.
A two-pack of NFL pint glasses and coaster set for the Dallas Cowboys.
Both
Utah
up.
Jazz two-piece ceramic mug set. Traffic. The NCAA Clemson Tigers backpack cooler. Bring that to a tailgate. Oh, it's almost tailgate season, Anderson.
Pickaxe. I've never been.
To Clemson?
I've never tailgated.
Okay. Want to come with me this year?
Negative.
And thanks to the people who bought Diablo 3 Ultimate Evil Edition and Far Cry 4. Video games were purchased through the Amazon banner. Thank you. Movie time.
Here are the movies that clicked through the last time. Alice in Wonderland was clicked through because we were just talking about that. Wachowski.
That's right.
City of God was clicked through. Falling down to the... Yes. God, I love that defense. That make me racist
really does.
Love him so much?
Yeah, you shouldn't love him that much.
He just gets out of...
He's an anti-hero.
He had me, Brian, when he left his car in traffic in L.A.
Let me ask you something. Is he an anti-hero or is he a sympathetic villain?
He's both, Brian.
Kind of is both.
He's both.
Because Robert Duvall is really the hero.
Defense. Yeah, but he didn't cheer on that fat cop? No. He'd be cheering on defense.
Defense.
He had me when he left his car. That was it. I mean, everything else that he did after that... I shouldn't say this, but even if he went to the dark side and he's like, yeah, you, the Nazi and I, we're the same.
I would still love him
because he still left his fucking car in traffic. You live in L.A., you deal with traffic.
That's a heroic move.
You and me, we're the same. Final Destination 3 was clicked through. I don't know why I said it was such a vigor. Hedwig and the Angry Inch was clicked through. Interstellar, somebody didn't listen to us. They all got Interstellar. Parenthood was clicked through.
Interstellar was pretty good.
Parenthood was clicked through. Big Hero 6. Click the 90 to get Big Hero 1 through 5.
Right. And you got
to
complete the set.
Commando was clicked through. That's a random one.
Yeah. Enjoy.
Oh, Commando. I was in love with her.
Alyssa Milano.
Oh, she was so hot. I was like young too, guys, so don't think that I'm petty. Okay?
Petter ass, dude.
Petty. John Wick was clicked through. That was a good little movie. I'm not going to say that one. Fuck's sake, I'm not going to say that. Superman 3 was clicked through. The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies clicked through. Did I say City of God?
No.
City of God was Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1. Part 1 is like a kick in the balls every time I read it. Part 1. The Ladies Man. Thor and Whiplash.
Yeah.
Whiplash.
Thanks for clicking through, everyone. We appreciate it. If you'd like to do your Amazon shopping and have it cost nothing and give us a couple pennies on the back end, the banner is on
Anderson@Brian.com.
And now back to the show. Hello, I'm Tyler Durden. Or am I? And you're listening to Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com.
Well, don't pay it no mind.
Yeah.
I just get this way sometimes.
Thanks to all of our featured artists this week. Light Out for the Territory, Madly and Dub, Smith and Whedon, FM Pilots, Stereoactive, and Greater Pacific. Thanks, you guys. Check them out, AndersonandBrian.com. And while you're there, notice the fan art this week from our old buddy Luke Slytalker. Luke's back with some good artwork. Saw it earlier today.
Very strange that it would be that similar to Luke Skywalker. You think that was on purpose?
I think it probably is on purpose, yeah. I think it's intentional.
And he probably talks slyly as well.
Talks slyly.
Hey, Brian, you ever read Thomas Hardy's Far From the Madding Crowd?
No.
No, it's a classic.
On a read, I write.
I'm not much of a. Oh my god, that might be one of the douchiest things that you've ever said.
I don't read books, Anderson. I write them.
So gross. Anyways, Thomas Hardy wrote a considered a classic called "Far from the Madding Crowd." It was made into
Madding.
Madding, yes. It was made into a classic film back in the 60s. I want to say. Anyways, Thomas Vinterberg, who we love from his work on The Hunt. I also love what he did with Celebration way back in the day when he did that little Dogma 95 film. But he did those are the two that I usually will cite for Thomas Vinterberg. But his most recent film, Far From the Madding Crowd, I'll be flickfesting that next week.
Oh. Is it in theaters? Is it?
It's a just a pure romance film. Romantic film, Brian.
All right.
And I enjoyed it.
Okay. Spoiler alert.
Holy shit. It's unbelievable that I could like it. Carey Mulligan plays the lead, but it's got a embargo going on. I think it might be lifted like the day. Anyways, it's not going to be out for like another 3-4 weeks, so I'll be talking about it maybe next week, but Far From the Madding Crowd.
Okay.
Thomas Hardy wrote it.
I'm sure to check that out in 3 weeks when
not,
it comes out.
Not Tom Hardy. Thomas Hardy.
Thomas Hardy.
Yeah. Oh, wait, fuck.
What?
Listener, I want to say one last thing. Eric Clemens, the guy that gave us that gift card.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's. I feel like you guys should give him a little thanks here.
Oh, we thanked him last week. Yeah, thanks, Eric Clemens.
He gave us $120 to split, but then he's like, oh, you fucked up. He sent me an email. He's like, no, I sent each of you. That was just your.
Wow, that was very nice.
So he sent you a gift card for $120?
You forwarded it to me, and I remember thought we talked about it last week. But
no,
thanks,
we did, as in $120 for the three of us to split, but no, each of us get one of those. That's very, very kind.
Oh,
very
wow,
nice.
That's super generous. I didn't realize that either.
You didn't know that, Logs?
I thought you were just sending it to me to like.
No,
buy your
no,
stuff
no.
For you.
That's your own.
Oh, nice.
It says for Logan.
Thank you, Eric.
Very nice, Eric.
Very thoughtful.
He did say it was ironic that he forgot to click through when he bought those.
Oh. We could have doubled our money.
But that is pretty much like a full, you know, 3 weeks worth of clicking through. So
yes,
thank you very much. I
indeed.
Appreciate that. We very much appreciate
That's
that.
That's very
Eric.
Cool. What are you going to get with yours?
Arbitrary.
Did you already spend yours?
Number, 120.
120 is a bit of an odd number.
Very strange. Yeah.
Did you already spend yours?
I wonder if he got like an inheritance of $360. Mm. He's like, what should
it's
I
like,
do?
Now where this is going.
I bought
Shouldn't
some
Logan get 15%?
Yeah. I bought some douchey light up skateboard wheels. And God, am I going to make Mike Carano jealous tomorrow when
was
I bust out the board.
Was it $120?
No, it's when I thought we were splitting it. All right, we're splitting hairs now. Talking about, we're not splitting hairs at all, but I can't wait before the after disaster tomorrow night because we always have a skate sesh before the show out in the parking lot when Carano sees my light up wheels. Tyler, too. But Carano's going to be. Holy shit, where'd you get those?
Mind.
I didn't get the. If I knew that the 120 was mine, I would have bought them. I would have bought him some as well.
Light up wheels for everyone.
Yeah.
Light up wheels all around. First round's on me.
College movies!
Got it, round.
Yeah.
College movies. Turns out there's a lot of movies starring college kids, college age kids who happen to be in college, but not exactly involving the college lifestyle, college experience.
Yeah, I went with college experience for the most
part. As did I.
Bart. Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Like, Cabin in the Woods is college students on spring break or whatever it is, but it's not, you know, it's not really a college movie. So I'm saying there's a lot of movies like that. Like, The Graduate came up on a lot of lists, and it's like, well, it's called The Graduate. He's clearly graduated.
Right.
So anyway, how much crossover do you going to have?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a clear-cut number one here. My number one, I look at it, I'm like, how is that number one? It wasn't like, wow, that's number one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
We might have a couple crossovers. Right. Don't try and look at my list. I just felt like we were in the gym, and like you look down.
Like your gym dick?
Well, I felt like that a little bit. Like you looked. I saw you take a guilty glance.
I can't help but glance, Anderson.
I don't
I've
read,
often wondered,
I don't
and now,
read
the,
books,
now,
I write
now we're in the locker room together.
All right, let's go. Number five.
I had to go
Jinx
obvious.
Bam.
My huh?
We both said number five the exact same time, so
number
I said
five.
Jinx Bam.
Ah, bam. Number five. I had to go obvious. It was either that or go clever, and I decided to go with an obvious choice, which I expected in the listener top five. Animal House, 1978.
I'm glad you put that on there because it was on my list.
Mentioned.
It should have yeah, it should have been it's on my also ran.
Oh shit.
I saw this very late. I saw Animal House very late. And I think I saw it like 6 years ago, five years ago. I was doing the show with you.
You probably appreciate it more then. I saw it when I was like 16. I didn't quite get it.
I would think that I would have liked it maybe more at the time or less. It's hard to tell. It's one
you
of
have
those
to
movies.
Be, I think, in college or at least familiar with what goes on in college. I was like a high school sophomore.
There's a lot of great stuff in this movie, though.
Mm.
And I think it helps me enjoy it looking at it in today rather than at the time. I think I would have thought it was, you know, I would have. But that's maybe because it's my personality. But like if a bunch of like my peers love this movie
right.
and we're like acting like
You're
John
rebelling
Belushi.
Against it.
But there's some great stuff. John Landis.
Yes, and let me say, I forgot to say this at the beginning. Number one, interesting about how many of my directors in my top five either didn't have a traditional college experience, quote-unquote, or didn't go to college at all.
John Landis high school dropout.
Yeah. High School Dropout, written by Harold Ramis, a ZBT at Washington University in St. Louis, and Doug Kenny, National Lampoon editor at Harvard, and Chris Miller, an AD Phi at Alpha Delta Phi at Dartmouth University. But so you guys had the college experience.
I should also say I have not seen any of these movies that are on my list in quite some time.
I did plenty of research, so let me just give you some facts.
Oh, we're going to talk more about Animal House.
Is that okay? Are you going to talk more about it later?
That's fine. I don't have anything. I remember I was dreading the scene, and I think you might have actually assigned it to me.
Interesting.
I could be wrong.
I think it was before we did Gambling.
It was chock full.
It's a good movie.
It's solid. Yes. There's a lot there.
It is set at fictional Faber College in 1962, shot at the University of Oregon. So the legend is that the university president, you know about this? The university president was bummed at missing out on, he passed on The Graduate. The Graduate wanted to shoot there. He passed on it. He sort of was kicking himself ever since 1967. And when Animal House came calling, he said, sure, I'm not going to pass up this opportunity to get another movie shot here, another classic. And he was, of course, horrified when it turns out that it was Animal House. But then, of course, he was proven right in the long run because it's a
classic. Can you imagine how much he'd be kicking himself if he did turn that one down?
Turn down both.
No, it's too raunchy. Nope.
It was also passed on by the University of Missouri because the school president actually read the script. And to prepare for the roles, the actors who played the Deltas, like the frat guys, the Delta Tau Chi's, they went to a party at Oregon's SAE house, and the frat guys hated them so much they actually like attacked them and beat them up, and there were a fight ensued. It's good stuff.
What year is this? 78?
This is 78. Set in 62. Actually filmed in 78. Shot at Sigmund Newhouse. Inside the real Sigmund Newhouse at University of Oregon.
It's all Greek to me.
It's good stuff. Number five for you.
Number five for me. This is another movie that I saw while doing this program. I missed it.
Okay, so in the era of film.
I may have flick fested even a few years ago. 1985.
Wait a minute. I assigned you a movie. Didn't see.
What?
Devil Wars. Oh, no, I had this on the list.
Settle down. You just jumped way back.
I really did.
You just went through a wormhole
in
about 20 minutes.
Bring me back.
Jesus Christ.
I wrote down a Devil Wears Prada for the future. Whoa, that was close, guys. I'm sorry. Whoo!
No one needs to hear me talk about the fucking Devil Wears Prada, Brian.
You're going
to
love it. Nobody needs. You're going to love it.
I don't think so.
It's a genuinely good movie.
I don't think so.
I did not knowingly assign you a bad movie.
I think you have many times.
Did not knowingly.
1985, Brian. A little movie called Real Genius.
I've never seen Real Genius.
Real Genius. You never seen Real Genius?
Like you, I'm late to this movie.
This movie involves pranks, revenge, geniuses, or genii, or genius. It's kind of ironic that I don't know how to say the plural of genius.
Genie.
As well as Val Kilmer playing a character named Chris Knight, Brian. Mm. Chris Knight. Not Christopher Knight, Peter.
Sure, not
Peter
the actor
Brady,
from the Brady Bunch.
But no, his character's name is Chris Knight, as well as a Stacy Peralta in space, flying like a space shuttle. It opens with that.
Of course,
it's like War Games. So the movie does. Val Kilmer is on the cover. He's on the poster. But it's actually told through the eyes of like this boy genius who gets plucked out of high school for being like so smart, and then his roommate is this unorthodox genius in Val Kilmer, who is more interested in pranks and doing wild stunts and stuff than actually studying. And the high school age kid who is in his dorm is a little bit dismayed by all this, and they're secretly working on this it's like pretty much the Star Wars. For those of you who are old enough, remember the 80s and the Cold War, and there's an actual thing. I think they're trying to revive it, too.
Really?
Where Ronald Reagan created something called
the Star Wars Defense System.
Yeah, where they actually had satellites that were going to shoot missiles out of the sky. Sure. So if Russia were to shoot their nuclear bombs at us, we wouldn't necessarily respond and retaliate. We would shoot the missiles out of the sky so that they would fall on some unfortunate nation in between us and Russia, I guess.
Port Bulgaria.
Or the Pacific Ocean. Yep. Or Hawaii.
More like the Atlantic Ocean.
So essentially, that's what this is based around. Mm. And it turns out that there might be more to it than that. Mm. It's a goofy movie. It's a funny movie. It's a bizarre movie. And Real Genius is definitely a college film.
That was the first example of The Cloud.
Directed by Martha Coolidge.
Saving Our Ass.
Who's gone on to work in TV.
Okay, Real Genius.
Number five for me, Real Genius. Yeah, you know what? I went and I looked, and unfortunately not streaming on the old fuck flicks there, but their guess for me, 4.1. I'm very careful on what I rate. I only rate for the algorithms there on the old fuck flicks.
Why don't you rate Real Genius?
I don't rate everything because I like to go back and see how accurate they are, and I don't want to see my yellow stars. I would have 4-starred this movie. You know what I mean? It's like if I really like a movie, I'll 5-star that shit. If I really hate a movie, I'll 1 or 2-star that shit, and then I give a lot a 3 stars, and, you know, so they kind of figure out where I'm at.
All right.
But fuck you, Fuckflix, for automatically adding a star if it's streaming, which I know you're doing.
Don't like it.
I know you're doing. If Real Genius was streaming.
I brought that up.
My brother brought it up.
I brought it first.
Settle down.
See, seriously, they are officially inflated. They're artificially inflating their grades.
Little boy Bishop.
Try and get you to watch more movies.
What other college movie did you like there, bro?
Number 4 for me. Also a 4-star movie. That's actually interesting. These first 3 are 4-star movies, and then it gets into the 5-star category.
That's not interesting. That's called the way that we
put
the
rank list. Yeah. That's how you rank lists. Mm-hmm. Number 4. You know, you might get a lot of shit from hipsters or film lovers for liking Legally Blonde. I fucking love Legally Blonde. Yeah. Legally Blonde is a solid flick. Mm-hmm. You see it?
Yes, I've seen it.
I'll assign it to you.
I've seen it, bitch.
Do you not like Legally Blonde? You have a problem with Legally Blonde?
Might be on the list! Mm. You fucker!
Directed by Robert Luketic, who went to the Victorian College of Arts in Australia. This is his debut, and it might be... Is he a one-hit wonder? Because here's his resume. Win a Date with Tad Hamilton, Monster in Law, 21. Ugh, 21. The Ugly Truth, and Killers, which I had to look up, and Paranoia, which I had to look up also.
What was the one after the second one that you said?
Monster in Law, 21.
Mm-hmm.
The Ugly Truth.
Mm.
Written by Karen McCullough Lutz, who was in Alpha Gamma Delta, James Madison U.
Yes, she was.
And Kirsten Smith, who was went to Occidental College in Southern California. Shot at set at Harvard University, but Harvard only appears in a few aerial shots. You know why that is, Anderson?
No, Brian.
Harvard sustained physical damage when they let Love Story shoot at their campus back in the 70s. And since then, they've had basically a no filming policy. So a lot of movies you'll see set at Harvard, and there will be more than one on my list. Will be shot at other places. A lot of aerial shots, but other places will substitute for Harvard. Here. Yes. They substituted.
Why? How did they get burned?
The physical damage was caused by the shooting of Love Story, which is funny. You don't think of Love Story being a film that would entail a lot of physical damage, but you apparently the crew is messy.
See the Love Story?
I never saw Love Story.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
Yeah.
Isn't it good?
No, it's good.
I mean, it's supposed to be a classic, but I never really motivated to see it.
You want them to be in love.
Okay.
You want them together.
We'll see it someday.
Everyone that saw it back in the day, there was accounts that they immediately got banged by whoever they took on the date to see. Yeah, it was like Spanish Fly movie.
Oh, I have to work that in the
chicks
rotation.
Will get all it. Well, you don't get any sex from your
wife. I'm just saying, it'd be nice to sort of make it a sure thing. I wouldn't have to buy her a bunch of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
It's filmed at UCLA, USC, Caltech.
I'm picturing Bill Cosby having Love Story on his phone and just showing.
You ever seen this? It's a classic. Rose City High School in Pasadena. They also shot additional scenes at the Great Hall of Dulwich College in London because Reese Witherspoon was shooting a movie there and they had to do some reshoots.
Okay. You need an editor for your interesting fact.
This is actually originally set at Stanford in the original script.
Not important.
But Stanford disapproved.
Don't care.
Filmmakers went to University of Chicago and said, how about this? They said, thanks.
No, we're going to go down the full list.
Fuck it. Harvard.
Colleges.
Harvard. They went right to Harvard.
Prepping for the movie and locations for the movie. We're going to go down the full list.
Love Legally Blonde.
Universities reject. Number 2 for me was Legally
Blonde. Number 4 for you. We can talk more about Legally Blonde later.
You didn't even talk about the premise or anything.
That's what I'm saying.
I love the Legally Blonde.
More film.
Love it.
Good movie.
Legally Blonde. Hits you out of lefty. You're just like, what the fuck? I'm being smacked around by this Legally Blonde.
I like this movie.
What am I supposed to like? Does not compute. I don't even know how I saw it. Because, like, why would I even find myself seeing it?
Safe.
Number 4. This is a great movie. This could be anywhere on the list. Hey, popcorn. I just popcorn my list. Legally Blonde.
Boggle.
Okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to do it. 1986, Brian. 1986. 80s, big on colleges.
I never saw this
80s,
either.
Big on colleges.
Okay.
Back to school,
never
bitches.
Saw back to school.
Back to school, bitches. Fuck to the years. I love my Rodney Dangerfield movies, Brian. Yeah. But especially Back to School. I think this might be the best. Rodney Dangerfield.
Should I see this?
You should see this.
I think I wasn't allowed to see it when I was a kid, and I just never caught up to it.
First time I ever saw Sam Kinison ever.
Right.
I didn't even know he was a comedian. All I knew is he was the crazy professor that screamed a lot in Back to School. Loved! Sam Kinison in this movie. Back to School is about a ridiculously wealthy man. It opens up, actually shows him in his childhood. He was like a self-made man, and like I think his dad was a tailor or something. And then he makes his riches. Talking about Rodney Dangerfield here, Thornton Mellon was his name. He opens up the first ever tall and fat clothing store, Brian, and he became a corporate like mogul. And made millions and millions of dollars. Sure. And I found the quotes from his TV commercial where he asked, okay, here's the quotes verbatim from his TV commercial that they show him talking about his...
In the film.
Tall and fat. Are you a large person? Pleasantly plump? A little on the hefty side, perhaps. Well, let's face it. Are you fat? When you go jogging, do you leave potholes? Not great.
Nah, right? It's kind of cat skills.
When you make love, do you have to give directions?
A little borscht belt.
At the zoo, do elephants throw you peanuts? Here's the best
Stupid.
One. Do you look at a menu and say, okay.
That's the best one.
They zinged it. That was the best one.
That's all right.
But that was his little TV commercial in this movie. It stars Rodney Dangerfield, Thornton Mellon, and he's got a kid. And the kid's having a hard time getting into school. So Rodney Dangerfield gives a hefty donation to the school to allow him to go enroll. Because he never got his college education either. Kind of like Speely when he went back to my school. Gave a hefty donation. And they're like, yeah, sure, you can be in the school, but you don't have to show up at all. We'll give you credit, though. Mm. Sorry, I'm getting on tangents, but that's a true story.
It's obviously bothered you.
I don't want to get back. I don't want to get back to it. Talk about that later, maybe. But so he goes to school with this kid. And who else is in this? Ned Beatty's in this, Brian. Robert Downey Jr. is in this, Brian. Burt Young.
Paulie.
Sally Kellerman. And Kurt Vonnegut playing himself.
Kurt Vonnegut? Oh, he's playing himself. I'm like, Kurt Vonnegut's an actor?
So there you go. Back to school. A ridiculous premise, but it's a vehicle for Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah,
and if you like Rodney at all and his work, and I think a lot of our audience a little bit too young maybe to even know the greatness that is. I mean, everyone's seen him in his stylings in Caddyshack. And that's pretty much him. He had one bit. He did it well, and he did it over and over again.
He was a one-trick pony. He did that one trick super well.
You might say that he tried another trick in Oliver Stone's Natural Born Killers.
But
a creepy trick.
He was kind of doing the same thing, just a different version. Right?
Hey, the kid. Logan, what do you think of Rodney Dangerfield? What's your take on him?
I think he's funny. I mean, I've seen clips of his stand-up and just seeing him in movies here and there.
Well, it was a rough one, I gotta tell you. Bill Burr's been doing him all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Nice. Too much. All right, here we go.
Number three. One of my almost awesome movies. Actually, I don't know if this is on the actual list, but I would consider this an almost awesome movie.
Sorry, I'm just thinking of Rodney Dangerfield.
What are you thinking about?
Just thinking of doing a cannonball.
Well,
obviously, he upsets very many of the prestigious professors on campus, and everyone's very angry at his life because he plays the same character as Caddyshack. He's very loudmouth, verbose. Mm-hmm. He's got his money, and he just does what he wants. But he's getting an education, too.
Sure.
It's almost like an early
Isn't the diving
Billy
team
Madison.
Or something?
Yeah. A little similar to Billy Madison.
Okay.
Cool. All right.
Much like Animal House was a shot in 78, but set in 62. Another film that takes place in the recent past. Rules of Attraction.
Mm.
You almost threw up in your mouth.
Don't like this one.
You don't like it?
I like
Rules of Attraction. I consider it an almost awesome movie. A very good movie that didn't quite get there.
We've talked about this.
It's an awesome category. Written and directed by Roger Avery, who went to the Pasadena Arts Center College of Design.
And they said, no, you can't shoot your movie here. So then he went over to Cal Arts.
No, he actually attended.
Oh, I see.
Attended. That was his alma mater.
What do you think he did to Tarantino?
It couldn't have been good. And by the way, footnote, I should have mentioned this. The director of Dreams on Spec, the documentary I mentioned earlier, Daniel J. Snyder, worked at Video Archives with Tarantino and Roger Avery.
Oh, look at that.
So a funny little,
same little video story.
Coincidence. Oh.
But yeah, Roger Avery
and Tarantino were
partnered, and they worked a lot together.
I don't think they did work a lot together, Anderson. I think they sort of
early on,
before either of them were doing anything, kind of like bounced a lot of shit around, and Tarantino used his story about the boxer, Butch the Boxer, in Pulp Fiction, and I think that kind of drove a little wedge between them.
That could be.
Because it wasn't on the screen. He didn't get screenplay credit. He got story by co-credit and won the Oscar because they give it to people with story by. So he and Tarantino won the Oscar. I'm under the impression that they're not on great terms.
Yeah, I get that feeling too. And then I guess his other big movie that people might know is Killing Zoe.
Not a
which
movie.
Aggressive use of techno music, EDM you call it nowadays. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the first times I'd ever seen that used heavily.
He did something else that was sort of notable. I think
Tarantino met his new boyfriend, Robert Rodriguez.
Possibly.
Has never looked back.
Yeah, never looked back. So this is set in the late 80s. The budget was just $4 million, which is awfully low, even for 2002, especially a movie starring James Van Der Beek and Shannon Sossaman and Ian, mm-hmm. all those people, Jessica Biel. Mm-hmm. Yes, based on the novel of Bret Easton Ellis, set at Bennington College. No, excuse me. He went to Bennington College. It's set at Camden College, fictional Camden College.
Bunch
in
of
New
despicable
Hampshire.
Characters.
Yes, bad people. So this is actually Bret Easton Ellis' favorite film adaptation of his work. This was filmed at the University of Redlands here in Southern California.
It's a hipster thing to say, Bret Easton Ellis.
Fake snow was added to simulate winter. And, this is interesting, Anderson. Did you know that Roger Ebert considered having the stars of Less Than Zero, McCarthy and Jamie Gertz, to a cameo where they were going to come back to campus and Andrew McCarthy.
That would have been cool.
McCarthy's going to play like a film executive or a film director or something, scouting location.
I would have liked that.
That would have been interesting, a little cameo. But I thought it would take people out of the movie.
By far and away, the best part about this movie is the real life trip that the kid takes in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, the montage.
That's like a 2 week European trip that he takes,
yep.
College style, where he's just puking everywhere and partying everywhere.
Here's my Europe trip.
Hooking up with chicks. Yep. And it was very innovative because he used a camcorder and actually went on the trip. I was dating a girl who knew this guy.
It was like a 4 minute standalone montage almost.
It was great. It was the only thing that I really remember fondly about Rules of Attraction.
This is my number one. This is my number one death scene.
I remember somebody getting cum on their back too.
Yeah, that happened.
Didn't like it.
They vomited on the back.
Vomiting and cum. I think there was some dual
possibly
fluids. Brian, dual fluids. Number three for me. Here's my one dramatic movie on the list.
Rules of Attraction is dramatic.
Stars Jesse Eisenberg and Jason Ritter. I love that man, Jason Ritter. God, I love that man.
Eisenberg and Ritter.
Yeah. Education of Charlie Banks, I'm talking about 2007. Education of Charlie Banks. It's a fantastic movie, and it's marred, Brian. It's marred for one simple reason.
Why?
That's because the man who sings about Nookie directed it.
Oh,
and it's not fair.
Yeah, it's all about the Nookie. So
because people
cookie.
Can't see past the Fred Durst, and they need to, because this is a great little movie. Education of Charlie Banks is it's a coming of age story. Mm. It's a terrifying movie at times. Here's the premise. Here's the long short. It starts like in I think grade school, high school, young age, junior high, and there's like three kids. Jesse Eisenberg, his really good friend, and then this other kid who's like the bully, the class bully.
Right.
Like he's a scary kid named Jason, played by Jason Ritter. He plays like the big...
Jason Ritter?
Yeah, I know. It's a fucking stretch, but he pulls it off.
All right.
So there's some shenanigans that go on. Eisenberg, his character, Charlie Banks, may or may not be somewhat of a snitch. Let's just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Years go by, and Charlie Eisenberg and his friend from childhood, they're rooming together, they're dorming in college, away in college. And he's very upset and dismayed to hear that Jason Ritter, Mick, is his name.
Also there.
He's coming to visit for the weekend.
Oh, okay.
And he has bad feelings about this kid because he was a big bully. And, you know, his Eisenberg's friend is friends with him, you know, is like by association, but he never really felt comfortable around him. Mick not only comes to visit, he essentially moves into the dorm, starts going to classes, starts like dating around in the same pool, and he's just like becoming like this. He's not at the school. He's not enrolled, but he's living the college lifestyle, and it's not played for laughs. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, this guy's not healthy. This guy's not...
Is he doing it to fuck with Eisenberg, or is he just...
You're not sure. You don't know what the fuck's going on. And he's actually, you know, confiding in Eisenberg, and they're becoming friendly, but Eisenberg's a little bit like standoffish. That's why it's called The Education of Charlie Banks. It's a double entendre, obviously. Really well-made little movie, despite the fact that a man with a red backwards hat was at the helm.
You think he did a good job. He wore the backwards hat all during filming?
I don't know.
I like to think he did. I think he kept it real.
The film premiered at the 2007 Tribeca Film Festival, Brian. Tribeca Film Festival. That's De Niro's film festival. And it won. It's kind of weird that they have such a narrow category, but it won Best New York Narrative.
Best New York Narrative set at a college about an education of a character named Charlie?
Just Best New York Narrative. Period piece, too, because it takes place primarily in the 80s.
See?
So a lot of these
college
70s.
Movies take place in recent past.
I wish this was streaming. It was actually a listener who had me watch this. He kept sending me links and kept saying years ago. Like it was when I lived, when I first moved in with the wife. So it was probably 6-7 years ago now. I think we were doing the show over at 97.1. And that's when I saw it. And I love it. Education of Charlie Banks. Eisenberg, always great. He was great in this.
Sounds good.
Education, Charlie Banks.
Education of.
Fred Durst, I thought that he had made 3 or 4 movies.
He has, right?
He's only listed on IMDb as of today as making 2. He made an Ice Cube movie after this one, which I will never see, and it's poorly rated.
Huh.
I keep saying things that sound racist. Like, why would I love this movie with Jason Ritter?
There's no reason.
And Jesse Eisenberg, but I won't even watch his one other movie with Ice Cube. I need to watch that.
Yeah, why are you a racist piece of shit?
But I heard that it's awful.
Hmm.
But this one too, it's not rated that high. I think it's like a 6.3 on IMDb. If Fred Durst's name is not on this is easily a.
Oh, you're talking about The Long Shots. The Long Shots is the other movie he directed.
That's the other movie that Fred Durst directed.
Written by Nick Santora.
Oh, look at that.
He's a frequent guest of the Corolla Show.
I know the name.
Good guy. Nice
listen,
dude.
Listen to me. Listen, I know that Fred Durst had been credited with directing more movies, and they disappeared off IMDb. Yeah. I don't know what happened.
Disappeared history.
I don't know what happened.
Are you sure you're not confusing with Rob Zombie?
Now, I'm very sure, Brian. They're very different people.
They're not very different.
They're absolutely super different.
Mm.
I've dealt with both of them personally, and they're very fucking different.
Coming up next, more college films. All your dreams came true. If the night is still alive, your problems ran to hide, and all you know came through. This is where we belong. Good news, Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
You don't sound excited.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
The news yet, I guess. Baseball season almost here.
Yeah!
Yeah, buddy. This episode goes up on a Friday, so it comes, baseball season starts just a few days. Good news, there's never been a better time to check out DraftKings.com, America's favorite daily fantasy baseball site, where you can win huge cash prizes every day. The best thing, the worst thing about fantasy baseball normally is the season-long commitment.
Yeah, everyone
does
that.
You got to set your lineups. You got to maintain your pitchers and only pitch a certain
number of
innings.
And you get a couple injuries and you're done. This is daily. Now, I know this is probably going to come to a shock to you, Brian, but I love doing DraftKings with baseball more than any other sport.
More than hockey?
More than hockey.
What?
I do. Because it's a great accompaniment, a companion to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Baseball's slow moving and I can have a few games and have a bunch of players on the roster, and it makes it more exciting.
If people want to challenge you, what is your name over there on DraftKings?
It's Brian Sucks. That's Brian with a Y.
Why would you do that?
I was very angry at you when I had to make my name on the fly. Brian Sucks.
Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use the code TFV to play for free in the $100,000, that's a lot of money, fantasy baseball contest on opening day. First place takes home 10 grand. Enter TFV for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.
Hey, I'm 2-time survivor Rob Cesternino and host of Rob Has a Podcast right here on Podcast One. I'm breaking down what just happened on reality TV competitions like Survivor, Big Brother, The Amazing Race, and more. We're talking with all your favorite players and interviewing the new contestants after they get eliminated about just how badly they screwed everything up. So come on over and talk about reality TV with me on Rob Has a Podcast in the TV and film section here on Podcast One anytime. Or at least until they vote me out.
Bowie. Yeah, Bowie. Welcome back. Thanks to all of our feature artists this week. Check them out, AndersonBryan.com.
Zeph. Oh, my love affair continues with DeAnford.
You think DeAnford went to college?
The listeners keep sending me little nuggets. I love it. I'm going to talk about it at length on the After Disaster. I got some good DeAnford stuff because I was a little bit worried and concerned because there's this one song by DJ High Tech that the lyrics say, DJ High Tech will fuck you in the ass, you faggot ass white boy.
Get that drop.
And I didn't like it. I did not like that. And I'm like, what are you doing? It came to light. A listener sent me a little, I think that he might have actually just kind of stumbled across it as to what it's a reference to. Back in. Could explore that on the After Disaster.
There's a logical explanation.
Oh, yeah, there is. It's a quote. He's just quoting. It's a great quote.
Well, if he can do it, why can't I do it?
You can't. Okay. Because he's black and he's gay.
Oh.
Even though there's probably 2 or 3 different DJ High Techs. that DJ Hat Tech will fuck you in the ass.
Number two for me. I don't need to spend a lot of time on. It's a 5-star movie for me, though, and I doubt you feel as strongly about it as I do, but Old School makes me laugh. Love Old School. 2003.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. Written and directed by Todd Phillips, an alumnus of NYU. And this is Jeremy Piven is the dean of fictional Harrison
He's
University in New York. The story is based partly on Court Crandall, the writer, her experience as a Phi Kappa Theta at the University of New Hampshire. This is shot at USC, UCLA, Palisades High School. Did you go to Palisades High School?
No.
Thought you went to Pali?
No, Brighton. Yes, I grew up down the street from it at one point.
Oh.
I spent some years, but I never went to school there. I used to smoke a lot of cigarettes and skate my skateboard around those
parts. Did you recognize any exteriors in the shots?
Yeah, I always recognize it. Pali High's in everything. Like the Modern Family, they always use the Pali High football field.
Okay. Also, but the LA Coliseum, the Rose Bowl, and some, again, overhead flyby shots of Harvard University.
You know why? Because that one movie fucked it all up.
Damaged. Yeah, it was damaged.
Love story. Fucked it all up.
Love Story left people with emotional damage and left Harvard with physical damage.
This movie deserved it on the top five college movies. It was such a big phenomenon at the time.
God damn, it was funny.
It really was. Will Ferrell was great. There's so many funny moments in this movie. It's the hipster in me that won't allow it.
It was Vince Vaughn's comeback movie. It was fantastic. Will Ferrell, I have to look at his IMDb, but I feel like this is sort of his star-making movie roles.
One of his first. Yeah, like, wow, he can do the big screen, too.
Yeah. He was a force of nature, man. He was great. And the lead, the main character, Luke Wilson.
Running on the streets naked. Yeah, you forget this Luke Wilson because he plays a straight man.
They called him One Take Wilson because he nailed all his takes.
Pretty monotone, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty monotone.
He didn't have a lot to do. Number two for you.
Luke Wilson.
Number two for you.
I just learned about some celebrity who...
Me?
No, Brian.
Number two for you.
That was genuine, kids. That was genuine. What he just did was genuine. And it was.
I did not knowingly call myself a celebrity. Yes,
that was just instinctual. Like, it's just it's out of thin air.
Reflexive.
Number two for me, already been discussed, Legally Fucking Blonde. Why I saw Legally Blonde is still a mystery to me. I don't remember who made me see it or who coaxed me into seeing it.
It's a big hit.
2001. I was actually in film school at the time. Why I'm going to see Legally Blonde.
So you can talk about it derisively with your film school snobs.
Here's the deal. If you're a film student snob or you're a kid who's always seen the poster or maybe been exposed to Legally Blonde 2, which I will never, ever see. Well, not Sully.
I never saw that either.
Well, never Sully. I think they made a third one too, straight to video. Anyways, Legally Blonde 1. The 2001 edition, starring Reese Witherspoon as Elle Woods, will be streaming on the old Fuckflix come May 1st.
Really?
So in a month, a little less than a month.
How do you know when it's
they're
coming?
Starting to do that now. Really? I went to check for the listeners to see if it was streaming.
No shit.
And it says this will be streaming May 1st.
Well, enjoy, because this is a hell of a movie. You haven't seen it for some reason.
It's a fun little movie.
This is a great date movie, because girls will love this, and guys should enjoy it, too, because it's a good movie.
So, Reese, the premise is this, and I won't get into detail, obviously, but Reese Witherspoon, she's a bright girl, but she's very bubbly. She's very into fashion, and...
she's a sorority girl. She's a Delta Nu.
Before Paris Hilton was wandering around with the Chihuahua, she is in this movie. I think she is in this movie. Or a poodle.
She has
some
little
foo-foo dog, yeah. Yep. And she's very into all the...
She's superficial.
The gloss, yeah. She's very, very superficial. And she's going to UCLA, and she's like the president of her sorority.
Mm-hmm.
And she's dating McDreamy.
That's right.
And she's expecting him to marry her.
Great breakup scene.
And right before they graduate from college, he's going off to some big law school to become a lawyer. He explains to her that she's too superficial. He needs a more serious fiance.
Let me tell you something. I'm going to blow your mind right now. In two different movies, Reese Witherspoon plays a woman who was broken up with in a restaurant by a guy who needs a more serious, like he's moving on to a more serious woman, and she breaks down crying in both movies.
What's the other one?
The other one is Patrick Bateman, American Psycho.
No.
No?
No.
Interesting that you would say that.
Robert Easton Ellis. Not his favorite. It's not his favorite movie. That, based on his book.
You really do default to no.
Yeah, it's good. Good point, Brian. No, I don't think it was her.
I don't think it happened that way.
I didn't like that movie that much because I read the book. Can't read a book and then enjoy the movie.
Don't read books.
Rarely.
Anymore.
I know.
This is my book.
Anti that book. Brian, what's with all the book talk this week? Because somebody bought one for 50 cents and
exactly
now it's right
it
back to your head.
Over the edge. This is the most I've talked about this book ever on this show.
So anyways, Reese, does what any self-respecting woman would do. She chases him and goes to law school herself. And, well, she might surprise a person or two.
Yeah, she applies to Harvard. And this is a great example of suspension of disbelief. They sort of, in order to move, there's no movie. She doesn't go to Harvard. So they get her in, you know, she gets into Harvard. And then she becomes a law student.
And then they did, they used flybys and overheads of Harvard because it had been recently, beforehand, it was shot, a movie was shot, their love story.
Like 28 years earlier.
They ruined it. But this is, I want to say it's like on par with Miss Congeniality, another movie that was just delightful that I enjoyed thoroughly that I wasn't supposed to.
This one's a little better, but you're right. Those are both examples of good movies. Elevated the form. Those were silly movies that could have been come and gone, but they were good.
And it's because the leads both pulled their weight and they were fucking fantastic.
You're right.
And Reese was just great.
Good call, bro.
She's great. Don't call me bro. Thank you. Thank you.
Number one.
My number one. You know what? My number one is number one.
Mine is too. I wonder if it's the same one because it would make sense.
Leave this fucking room if it is.
Really?
I don't like if you and I have the same one, especially because you're a frat boy. Oh no, is it the same one? Please don't be the same one.
All right. Well, mine's The Social Network.
Okay.
Social Woo! Network. 2010.
I left this off the list because this is less about college and more about network.
It takes more place about 60% of the movie takes place at Harvard University.
It's top of my also-rans, my friend.
It's a great movie directed by David Fincher, who fantastic apparently did not movie go to college. I couldn't find any information on him going to college. Written by Aaron Sorkin, who went to Syracuse. Sorkin was actually advised, Anderson, do you know this, by Natalie Portman. He tracked her down, said, hey, let's... she threw him a dinner party, and she invited a whole bunch of her Harvard friends, and they recounted stories and told him what campus life was like, and like a great writer, he took notes and incorporated it in the movie. In fact...
I did know that.
You didn't know that?
Wait, I think we actually talked about that little factoid on this here program.
If we did, I ignored you, because I don't remember that ever.
There's a lot you probably don't know about me.
It's funny because
if you could steal a smooch from anyone in Hollywood, who would it be?
There's a moment where Jesse Eisenberg is talking about how popular Facebook became as Mark Zuckerberg in the film, and he says it's the biggest thing on campus with 400 scholarship students and these many Nobel laureates and this many of this and that and one movie star. And the guy's like, well, who's the movie star? And he said, doesn't matter. And the movie star was Natalie Portman. She was a student at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a little
that's
tidbit.
What he was suggesting in the, in the actual dialogue.
That's right.
That's cool. I like that.
It worked around the dialogue.
It doesn't matter. He played such a great smug cunt in this movie.
Eisenberg. He's the smuggest cunt.
Eisenberg, huge Ween fan too, which makes me like him more as a human being.
A lot of scenes shot at John Hopkins University in Baltimore, also prep schools in Cambridge, and Wheelock College, which I had never heard of before.
And they used a lot of overhead shots.
They did use a lot of flybys.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Because of some damage sustained to their physical structure.
Tilt shift. First time I'd ever seen tilt shift used was in this movie for the rowing sequence.
That was great.
And
Another movie with a great standalone sequence. The montage in Rules of Traction in this movie has that great rowing sequence.
I'd never seen anything shot that way before. I'm like, what is this? Must know more about this. And it's the tilt shift phenomenon, which you see quite a bit now. A lot of people use it. It makes everything look like miniatures and a little obscure.
Models almost.
Yeah, it can actually, a couple great apps on the phone that you can get that you can take your own tilt shift shots. I recommend a couple free ones that were great that I used to use a lot of. But it's all about where you place the focus. Speaking of Eisenberg, Squid and the Whale, one of my favorite my favorite Noah Baumbach movie. His new one, While We're Young, Noah Baumbach's new one. I would have seen it this week, but I hate the theaters that it's in. Hate them.
What about my theater?
It's at your theater, and it's at the fucking ArcLight.
Come see it with me.
I'm not going. I banned them, so I will see. It's going wide next week, so I'll be flick fasting that as well, Brian.
While We're Young, I hear good things.
While We're Young, I've heard good things. My buddy Rand tells me it's better than Squid and the Whale.
I hear good things.
I said, doubt it. I doubt it. Really doubt it, Rand. Okay, here we go. Number one for me. This is deservative number one. Besides, after going back and forth, this is the movie that I saw most out of all the movies on my list. This is a very college movie. Like, I don't think you can transfer this movie into like any other realm. Like, you're going to make it like about businesses or about high school.
Okay.
It has to be college. Revenge of the Nerds has to be set in college. Has to be, Brian.
Glad it come up on one of our lists.
Love it. Love it. Looks like a salad. There's so many cool
This is one of the best bad movies ever.
It's not bad because it hits the mark. It's it does exactly what it set out to do.
I just said it's great.
Revenge of the Nerds, 1984. The Alpha Betas. Alpha Beta. Ooh. I mean, how do you?
Forgot about that. Ted McGinley.
Phi Delta Phi, Brian, and of course Lambda Lambda Lambda,
tri-lams.
Or the Tri-Lams. The Alpha Betas opens up. They had burned down their frat house, and their coach, played by John Goodman.
John Goodman,
so great.
Yeah, you he's their all football just got coach. Your asses kicked
Hand
by
it to
a
you.
Bunch of goddamn nerds.
Nerds! Tell me you've seen this kid.
Yeah, several times.
Okay, good. And you know what? This is one of the few movies too where the sequel, not as good, but pretty damn close. Pretty damn close. Not a huge drop off. But you got Booger, of course. You got Lewis Skolnick. And Gilbert Lowe, played by Robert Carradine and Anthony Edwards. Sure. And then Ted McGinley, as you said, Stan Gable. Who's also Jefferson, Brian, from Married with Children.
Jefferson Darcy.
So, yeah, their frat house burns down, and all the jocks and the Alpha Betas, and their coach, John Goodman, tells them that they should just move into where the freshman dorms are. Just overtake the freshman dorms. So they displace all
these
poor freshmen.
They start kicking all these kids out.
And namely, like, if we follow the nerds. We are with the nerds. And they have to go live in the gymnasium, where they're also not very welcome. And they
the
half
school
of the
administrators
gymnasium,
are not very sympathetic to their plight.
Not at all. Seems like all the school hates the nerds as well. They want nothing but jocks at their school, which makes no sense, but it's fine.
True.
And through a series of unfortunate events.
The Alpha Betas are essentially the football team.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty much.
And John Goodman's the coach.
This is what my idea of frats are. Like, this is all realistic. So
right.
the poor nerds, they just want to be in a frat family because they know that's the only way they can fit in and get laid and this and that. So they rush and they find the Lambda Lambda Lambdas. And the Lambda Lambda Lambdas are like, hey, they're all black. It's an all black fraternity. They're like, you can't be in our fraternity. But one of the nerds, because they're nerds, so they're smart, they saw a loophole where there's a, in the, what do you call it for the you fucking frat people?
What, an initiation?
The charter.
Yeah, exactly.
You're a frat boy, too?
No, not at all.
How do you know that?
I don't know. It's just
the
word.
In the bylaws.
Vocabulary.
All right, the bylaws. They find a little loophole where, like, in the Lambda Lambda Lambdas, the Tri-Lambs, they offer, like, some kind of, like, 30-day mandatory probationary period. So they had to accept them. So now they're this fucking big, badass, black Lambda Lambda Lambdas.
National fraternity, yeah.
But one of their one of the nerds is a gay, very effeminate African-American young man, black
man. He's not out as gay. He could be just effeminate.
I feel like he was out.
He made the javelin to pursue his limp wrist.
I need to see this movie. I need to see this movie immediately. And it was the sequel. I think it was the sequel.
That's where Ogre becomes one of them.
It made me cry.
Oh,
I swear to God. A tear came to my eye, Brian. It was touching. Ogre. And I used to see
Didn't
Ogre.
Did Robert Carradine have an injury from chess? Did he have a chess injury?
Oh.
In the sequel?
I haven't seen this in years. I haven't seen either one of these in years. I saw the first one numerous times growing up, over and over again. It was one of those feel good. I just like one of those comfort food movies that I would watch. I love the Revenge of the Nerds. Revenge of the Nerds.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
Ballsy title, too, for back in 84. I mean, everyone would just assume, like, oh, Revenge of the Nerds. I never saw the first one. It's obviously a sequel.
That's right. What are they getting revenge for?
But I highly recommend it. I'm so glad that the kid has seen it many times, too. When Logan has seen a movie, a cheesy 80s movie many times, I think that's a good sign.
No, we should actually speak.
Not streaming, though. Unfortunate.
Logan is a seventh-year senior. We should ask him, Logan, your favorite college movie?
I'd have to go with Social Network. I mean, that's just one of my all-time favorites.
I mean, if we're talking about strictly on merit, yes. The Social Network is the best movie that...
There's a lot going
guilty,
on at the
Guilty
college,
choice, though. Accepted with Justin Long.
Oh.
I don't know. There's some funny stuff in there that always gets me.
I've never
is
seen
that with Tina Fey?
Accepted.
No, that's admission, yeah.
There are so many, like, Drumline.
Accepted
I meant to see
a
that.
Really, it has Lewis Black in it. It's a really goofy
Still
college comedy.
Accepted. I don't think I ever will. But I will see Drumline. I've never seen PCU. I have, like, no interest in ever seeing PCU.
You never seen
PCU? Maybe I have. I think you might have signed me. No, I'm pretty sure I saw it.
You know what?
I think I saw PCU.
As one who went to college in that era, you might actually find some stuff you like in PCU.
No, I saw PCU.
You did not see PCU?
Well-versed in PCU.
Mm-hmm. What are movies I haven't seen?
All right, so here's a little also rant.
No, we're going to list your top five. Let's your top five.
Okay, all right.
Number five, Real Genius.
Fuck.
Number four, Back to School.
Oh, wow, Jesus Christ. Wait, that's my five and four so far.
Number three, Old School.
Oh, if I lined up with the listeners, like 100%.
Seriously, thanks for listening.
Number two, PCU.
What is that? Oh, yeah, PCUs. Saw that just a couple weeks ago.
That was neck and neck with Old School, by the way.
Wow.
For most of my count. And the number one college film as voted on by our listeners is Animal House, of course.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, you know what? It was right there. Animal House, Social Network, Euro Trip. I just talk too much about Euro Trip. You know what I mean?
You do. Talk a lot about
Euro Trip. I love the Euro Trip.
Also, it's more about the Euro Trip than it is about college, right?
Yeah, it's less about college. But it's just like a college class. I believe that they're on the trip over there with the college.
It's the summer before college. Oh, okay. Like they just graduate high school.
Well, then I'm glad it's not on the list. There you go. Fandango, Brian.
I don't know what Fandango is.
It's another coming of age road trip, more of a road trip movie with a bunch of college friends get together. I flick fast and not that long ago. Huh. Wyatt Earp.
Huh.
Wyatt Earp, what's his name?
Kurt Russell?
No. Oh my God, my brain.
What's wrong with you?
Wait a minute. Stop looking at your phone. You're distracting me. Don't look at that.
You just hit me with your paper.
Yeah.
You admonished me.
Oh my God, it's right on the tip of my tongue. He's in everything. Field of Dreams.
Oh, Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner.
Wow, that's rough. And you can't come up with Kevin Costner.
Look at this. Is the shit that I have on my ulcer rings.
You know what I was doing?
San Elmo's fire.
You know what I was doing?
You're looking up Fandango.
I was writing down PCU.
Why don't you unwrite that? Waste your time. Road Trip, Brian. It's on there. With Honors. Ah, With Honors.
With Honors.
Remember that? Brendan Fraser.
Never saw With Honors.
Holy shit. It's a great premise. He's like on his way to a class and he's got like his like thesis paper. And he drops it and Joe Pesci, the homeless fucking guy, picks it up. He picks it up and he holds it ransom.
Doesn't like retreat to the sewers or something?
Yeah. He's like a vagrant.
He's an urchin.
He's like a total urchin. That's what he is. And he goes like back down and he has like those gloves with the fingers cut out. Kicking and Screaming, the worst Noah Baumbach film I've ever seen, but it's a college film, less than zero. Can't have that carnal knowledge, which I just talked about not too long ago, which is I did not enjoy that much. Rudy.
Rudy's a solid film.
But it's more of a sports film. And Brian, too recent, plus it wasn't told from the side of the college students, but it's very much college lifestyle.
Neighbors.
Neighbors.
Oh, jinx.
And We Are Marshall. I like that We Are Marshall, Mick G movie.
Right.
I saw it in Vegas. I watched it in the room when I was all
neighbors,
sad.
Neighbors solid.
From losing money, and I just laid in bed watching We Are Marshall, and I remember like, you know what? This could have been a worse movie.
The movie I did not put on the list.
Hold on!
Well, there's more.
If this was a full 90 minutes, the first act of storytelling, Todd Solondz movie, the Selma Blair story of storytelling.
Oh, she's,
with the Fuck Me Hard enter. Yep. That would have been on my list.
You can quote it. It's a movie.
It's a great movie.
You can quote the line.
Storytelling, fantastic movie. And that first act is all about her little college class where she's taking a creative writing class and she ends up banging her professor, who's large and black, and she's very left-wing.
It's Keith David, isn't it?
No. And
it's not?
Brian, don't be racist. It's not Keith David. But they have sex, and then he demands that she say very racist things while having sex, and she's very conflicted because she's like a liberal college student in a creative writing class, and she knows that she should not be saying that, and it's hilarious. It's so awful. and the movie, actually, they demanded that they put a big box over the sex scene because they thought it was too graphic because they're racist fucks.
Sure.
Having this little white girl getting banged from behind by this big black professor. So the studio was so offended by that they actually put a black box. And Todd Solondz, genius that he is, I think I've said this before on the show. Logan, you know where I'm going?
You can remind me. It's been a while.
Okay, good.
Why would you stop to ask Logan that?
Because if he knows where I'm going, then chances are somebody else. I can't rely on you.
No.
Todd Solondz wanted to make an entire trailer about the black box. Like, he wanted the whole trailer to be nothing but the black box. Of course, the studio didn't allow him to do that.
Didn't like that.
Oh, Todd Solondz. You ever see interviews with Todd Solondz?
No, actually.
Got to, like, look up some interviews on YouTube of Todd Solondz. One of the greatest characters out there.
All right. Will do. If I was to get Clever Anderson instead of Animal House, I would have put something like Beautiful Mind or Theory of Everything or Rounders. Mm. But these are not movies that are really about the college.
They have college aspects.
They are at college. They are set mostly at colleges and about professors or whatever or grad students, but didn't get clever. Could have done Dear White People. Not really. Also ran 22 Jump Street. I'm surprised you didn't mention that one.
22?
22 Jump Street. They go back to college.
Did not enjoy.
Wow.
Did not.
I liked it more than you.
Yeah, Brad, I love 21 Jump Street. Not like 22. It's just one of the reasons, one more reason why you're wrong and I'm right.
I thought thought you were going to say why the show's great. All right, good. Let's gamble.
Cornwallis. Lesson zero. Keep it screwing.
All right, last week you guys gambled on Get Hard.
Oh, did I say Higher Learning? Was it Remy?
Did not.
Higher Learning. You've never seen Higher Learning? It's cartoonish. Cartoonish racism. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like white supremacists, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's good. The Cole Hauser is fucking amazing in that movie.
Last week, the Rotten Tomato score for Get Hard was 36%. Anderson bid 32, and Brian 50.
Oh.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomato score for Get Hard is 30%.
Oh, no.
Anderson, the winner.
It feels good.
Good for you, buddy. You broke my streak.
Your streak of like four because I won a couple times. All right. Still, it's been ugly. It's been real goddamn ugly. I want this movie to break through. I know the chances are slim. Here's a problem with Danny Collins. Is there's really no proper way to market this movie. I don't think there's a way that they're going to be able to market an R-rated schmaltzy.
What's rated R?
I said that. I was clear about that in my review.
I only listen to every other word.
Danny Collins, go see it. I think it goes wide Friday. I hope you love it as much as I did.
All right, Danny Collins.
It got me, Brian. It got me.
All right, this week you're going to be gambling on Furious 7.
Oh.
What? Oh.
The seventh film in the Fast and Furious franchise.
It's going to win a Best Picture nomination, right, according to Vin Diesel.
Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Delusions of grandeur much?
He's very confident in that.
Is he? Mm-hmm. I have a very good friend that worked on this movie. Might have the inside scoop here.
Shit. I don't like when you have scoops.
Don't look at my number!
Look at your number!
Stop it! Have you written yours down yet?
Maybe.
Brian, because you know what I'm writing now.
Maybe. You have an inside scoop!
My scoop, he puts lenses on cameras. How much could he know? He scooped it, though.
God damn. You know what? I didn't change my number.
What'd you do?
70.
78!
Damn it.
And didn't people love the last one?
It got a oddly high score, and I think this one's going to do well also. I mean, I think...
I think that there's at least a few points because of the unfortunate passing of the Paul. Yeah.
Well, currently, with 54 reviews, the Rotten Tomato score for Furious 7 is 87%.
Oh, Sidney Crosby feeling good.
We got to deduct some points from Anderson for his inside knowledge.
What? I had a friend.
I don't like that.
No, actually, I didn't hear any shit about the movie. I just heard about the whole fiasco about him learning of Paul Walker's passing and what a fiasco it was. And I was over at Panavision watching them. Like, you know, it was really kind of creepy and sad because it was just the Fast and the Furious like prep room was just there collecting dust for weeks on end. But no, I might have read some stuff about how the re-edits went better than expected. I'm never going to see this.
Yeah, from what I've heard,
inside info,
they handle it very well. It's a Paul Walker thing
because it could have gone either way. It was very interesting
enjoy
to see
your tainted
like what
victory.
What's that?
Enjoy
it's tainted.
Tainted victory.
It's tainted.
You have inside info.
Well, I'm not allowed to read about movies. Oh, you know, a listener brought up a very good point.
What's that?
And that is this: I don't watch trailers.
Okay.
I go out of my way. I mean, obviously, I'm going to, you know, come across some, but I go out of my way to miss them because
that helps you.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
The trailers.
What?
The trailers always make a movie look better. Or in the rare case of Danny Collins, make it look worse. The trailers always make the movies look better. Oh, yeah.
So the listener suggested that perhaps.
Have you ever heard someone say, oh, did you see the last trailer for a film, The Blank? It looks great.
We have Logan say, here's what we're gambling on, and then he plays the trailer.
Don't no trailers on
shocking
the podcast
that you're
are
saying,
bad idea. No,
you're saying
I'm just
no.
saying for the quality of the
shocking.
Podcast. He can, you know what? If he wants to play the trailer and then cut it out,
you know what I said? I hate trailers so much. I'm not going to fight for it much. I'll bring it up.
If you want to play it for us and then cut it out, that's fine. I would not.
Trailers don't sound as good as
they sound
see
horrible.
As they look. Sorry, it's late.
A lot of explosions and music stings.
So okay, let's go.
Oh, before the music. Logan.
It's too late.
Do you want to talk about the special episode?
Yes, so I'm collecting...
No, I'll talk about it. Okay, so do you want me to talk about it?
Yeah, I saw emails. I didn't open either one of those emails. I'm very behind in life.
We have a special episode coming up. And Logan tweeted about it. He tweeted out here's what he tweeted. He said, send us, listeners, please, if you wouldn't mind, by Twitter or Facebook, send us your top five Film Vault moments of all time. We'd love to hear them.
Self-congratulatory.
Well, your favorite moments.
This is for our 5-year anniversary, right?
It is for the 5-year anniversary. People think, people were afraid, is Film Vault going away? Is Film Vault leaving?
Yeah, I got some weird emails from people. And it just said, Film Vault Health? I didn't open them because I didn't want to like open them and have like people critiquing. Because it was like, what's wrong with the Film Vault? What happened to the Film Vault? Film Vault Health? And I'm like, are these people just like upset with the quality of the program?
Well, the quality of the program can't be helped. Is that weird? It's actually the 5-year anniversary at the end of this month, Anderson.
Well, 5-year anniversary
since we launched
this
podcast.
In this form.
Yeah, but I'm considering, I consider the podcast its most fully realized version. We have a producer, we have clips.
We had some great times in 97.1.
I'm not saying there weren't good shows, they were fun, but this is the most realized version of the show. As such, the 5-year anniversary is coming up, and in addition to the listener top five, which will be your top five moments of the show, we'll do our own top five. We will, Logan's pulling clips, he's going to search for them, so if you can, be specific. Like, oh, I think it was this episode. You don't have to if you don't want, if you can't, but if you don't
yeah,
worry
help,
about
help
it.
The kid out with like, a lot of you guys are savvy. And like, you know, if you just take a snapshot even like on your phone and send it to them.
Yeah, we might have some special announcements coming up with the 5-year anniversary episode as well.
Oh, ooh. No, I don't know about that. What's going on? Is he quitting? Is he moving
That'd
on?
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Did he get little ears in here? Takes
what if
place?
He fires himself?
That'd be weird. I don't like that. Logan, you better not be quitting.
No, you know of these announcements already. We've already been talking about
talked about it.
Oh, we did?
This is just plans.
Oh.
That's not that special.
That's pretty cool. It's actually kind of cool.
I know. Anderson is forgetful. And
well, I just prioritize my memories.
So here's what you do. You can go to Facebook, Twitter. You can go to Red Edit, I suppose. The Film Vault on all of those things. You can play the music now, Logan. And let us know your favorite top five, your favorite moment, Film Vault moment. Maybe it can be more than one, but a moment that sticks out to you is funny or memorable or what have you. Yeah. And go to
when are we doing that episode?
That'll be late April. It'll be in a few weeks. Let's say, you know what, as a due date, about April 20th. Actually, it might be too early.
That's 420, bro.
420, bro.
It's Hitler's birthday. It's Columbine. I don't think we should associate that.
419.
It's my sister's due date, which makes it the Antichrist's possible Antichrist's birthday as well. Let's not do the 420.
Yeah, April 19th is a good
419 is a good. That's
deadline.
A Sunday. So do it by the 19th if you could, please. And look forward to hearing what you guys have to say. Thanks for listening, you guys. AndersonandBrian.com is where you go to comment on the episodes. And maybe you can leave your little thing there, your moment.
Your little thing there.
Your little thing,
you
your little
belittling
moment.
Bastard. Little thing there.
It's really more insulting to me because I'm the one who thought about the idea, but...
It's a little self-congratulatory. I don't know how I feel being involved, but it could be fun, too.
Well, most of the moments will be self-deprecating. It'll be us yelling or embarrassing ourselves or being drunk or whatever.
I can see, like, where I drowned on my beer.
I almost drowned.
Do we even have those shows available?
Yeah, well, Logan can dig through those.
Okay.
We threatened to make Katie airtight?
Yeah, that was a good time. Was that when I choked on my beer?
That was the same episode.
Same episode?
That was a raucous episode.
That was the first drinking episode that we did.
It was. It was one of the only drinking episodes. I brought a keg into the studio. A half-finished keg.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
You cheap bastard.
No, it's my birthday. I don't want to go bad. Yeah. AndersonBrian.com. AndersonCowan.com. Go to TheAfterDisaster.com to listen to that. And, yeah, looking forward to it.
And the P.O. Box. Is it on there? If you want to. I've not gone to the P.O. Box. I'm a little bit nervous. It's been. I got it a couple weeks ago. I've not gone. I'm going tomorrow for the first time. Send, if you'd like. Also, God, I'm bad at this. But I should say these shirts that I have, that I spent a lot of money getting these shirts printed out because I wanted to give some to the people that helped me work on my films and whatnot. I still owe some of you guys, so do not buy that. If you worked on one of my films, do not buy a shirt. I got one set aside for you. But all the proceeds are going right back into either my next short or the post-production on these things or festival fees. I mean, those of you who have worked on these things, you know that they don't pay for themselves. They're very expensive. Everything adds up. Everyone nickels and dimes you. So it's a little fun. So $25 for a shirt. Send me a check or a money order. I know some of you are worried about sending checks to the P.O. Box that you can find there on the site. P.O. Box 570058, Tarzana, California, 913. I don't
it's
know.
On the site.
It's on the site. And yeah, just tell me what size you want. They're black. They're very comfy. I can guarantee you that. Logan and Brian, I'll get you guys a shirt there. It's good.
Love
look.
It.
It's good
love
looking
it. Love
logo.
It. Love
you
it.
Get a lot of looks. Like, what is that logo? What is that all about?
A lot of people are trying to
I always see a lot of people staring at it going, what is that? I love my logo. I love it. I love that logo.
I can't wait to wear it.
I'm just hoping the movies make it justice. Do it justice.
You know what? The only one to control that is you.
We do it for Van Gogh. Different fear.
bring on the early morning.